go.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We have officially made it through another week. What does Mark Twain say in the Diary of Adam and Eve? Pulled through. That's us. Pulled through. It's Friday. It's the fourth day of April, 2008. This is Head On as you head into your weekend. Mine is a few hours yet from starting. Great weekend lineup, as usual, on the way, coming your way on the horn. Billy Shears and Night Sounds, Saturday night, 9 p.m., right here, only on the horn, as well as Rick's Place and Rick Goodner, horn psychotherapist, coming your way at either 6 p.m. or midnight Saturday, depending on how quickly I'm able to download the program. Your humble host will be entirely behind whether it runs at 6 or midnight. Just how it goes around here. Reinventing radio, reinventing the American dialogue, the American conversation. Quick note for you, coming up the first of next week, 3 days focusing on a little something going on in Washington, D.C. called Lobby Week. We'll be talking to some mountaintop removal activists whom you've never met before. On Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, as they take the message of the destruction of the hills and hollers of West Virginia to the seats of power in Washington, D.C., and I hope you will be there for that. Coming up Thursday of next week, a fun conversation. Brewing beer as an act of freedom. How about that? Yeah, that's gonna be a lot of fun. We will have with us Thursday next week, beer activist Chris O'Brien. And you know what? I just know that's gonna be a cool conversation. Right now, however, it being Friday, with us on the line from MakeThemAccountable.com, and from the windy city, hopefully not the frozen city, thawing out at least city, Chicago, Carolyn Kay. Caro, good to talk to you.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Good to talk to you. I have some exciting news for you.
Yes?
The sun is shining.
I'm glad it is somewhere. I mean, I'm suffering extreme sunshine deprivation here in the hills.
We had weeks and weeks of clouds and storms and this and that and the other. Well, finally, it's starting to kind of get warm. I know people in the South will think this is fun. When it gets up to 40, 45 degrees, we break out the swimsuits.
Yeah, short sleeve weather.
Feels
sure.
So good.
I was talking with a friend of mine about my sister lives in Mobile down on the Gulf, and you know, you being from the Gulf area as well, you can sympathize. When she first moved down there in 1971, Caro, she said, "These squirrely people sell sweaters down here. What's wrong with them?" Now, when the temperature drops below 60, she bundles up like an Eskimo.
I know. Our bodies do accustom themselves to the prevalent temperatures of wherever they live. I mean, there's no question that they do that.
So, yeah, still gray skies here. We had a brief moment of sunlight a couple of days ago, and I stood on the stoop of the studio here and just let the sun strike me, and I felt like I was on another planet.
Yeah. Well, you're east of us, so, you know, the weather moves west to east, so you should be getting some good weather.
I'll cross my fingers and hope, and I got my garden ground about 100 by 100 square plowed early early in March, and haven't had a chance to get it disked yet so that I could get the tiller into it, because it stayed so doggone wet.
You can't
disk when it's wet.
I don't know if the farmers up here have been able to get the corn in.
Well, I'll tell you what.
My expert over here says it's wet, but he doesn't think the... He's not trading corn, but he's sure they're not getting it in yet.
he's not off trading on the Chicago Board of Trade on the corn futures?
He does trade futures, yes.
Oh, how did I? Oh, my God. I had no idea. See, I'm going to be cute and smart alecky, and I get it right back. I'll be darned.
See, we don't live on the farm, but we benefit from the products thereof.
I tell you what, there's a lot of bizarre information that is passed us by, or passed through the information clearinghouse, if you will, over the course of the week, Caro. Dare I say that we're looking here, and I'm pulling this from your digest today. Is this Larry Craig Redux, the bankruptcy judge in Boston who immediately resigned when he was busted in drag?
Well, I don't think this is quite the same thing, because I don't think that this judge was doing anything wrong in his cross-dressing. I don't believe
he was driving under the influence in a dress, but
the driving under the influence is bad. Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. You can do that absolutely naked and get away with it.
Correct. I mean, you know, but except being naked, I think probably is against the law.
Well, that's true. That's true.
But cross-dressing, I don't think is against the law anywhere. So I thought it was great. I enjoyed hearing that other judges stood up for him and said, wait a minute, you know. I mean, to me, that... well,
that's true.
There's another voice in this room. Yeah. I don't know if you heard it.
Did I hear he wears a gown to court?
They wear gowns in court. They all wear gowns, see?
Yeah. And it was a stunning black frock that he was caught in, so there's probably not much difference one way or the other.
So they're all interested in being able to cross-dress.
You know,
I think it's a great milestone for this country to not care whether somebody, if some man wants to wear women's clothes. You know, I mean, I wouldn't want my significant other to be that involved.
Well, you know, one either has the legs for the fishnets or one does not.
Well, you know, a lot of men have very, very good legs. Remember when
I got to say right off the bat that I'm utterly clueless on that.
Remember when Joe Namath?
Oh, the pantyhose ad. Sure, sure, yeah.
Yeah, he has great legs. Had. I don't know if he still has.
And the amazing thing with that was he'd had his knees broken and rebuilt about nine dozen times.
Yeah.
And that went to prove it was legs, right? It was legs pantyhose.
I don't
or
know
Hanes
that,
or something. It goes to show the quality of their coverage that, you know, in that magazine ad you couldn't see all the surgery scars on his knees.
Obviously touch ups.
Yeah, well, you know, early airbrushing, I suppose. Now, you see a story like this, Caro, and it makes me think, okay, so what? He's a Bush appointee. He's another Republican out there. You know, do as I say and not as I do. I'm not nearly concerned with his cross-dressing as I am with the fact that of what he does, regardless of how he's dressed in the bankruptcy court. You know, we had an attempt to fix some rather dire problems this week in the Congress with regard to the housing crisis, part of which would have had an impact on bankruptcy filings.
Yes, but see, we can't help all these, you know, ordinary people who did terrible things by getting themselves into trouble on these mortgages, okay? We can't help those people.
But do you think they could have gotten a break if they had filed bankruptcy in drag?
Perhaps if they went before that judge.
See, I mean, you
have to be smart about these things. You have to have the right lawyer that tells you, look, this is the cross-dressing judge. Now, I want you to wear your best dress.
Oh, God. You know, it really just makes the mind reel a little bit, Caro. But seriously, once again, the middle America, struggling America, got the shank put between its ribs by the Republicans in the Senate.
Yes.
The day before the
Milbank's piece that wasn't in the mailing that I sent to you. It was on another part of my website. He says, "Brother, can you spare a billion?"
I know. And
those are the guys we're helping out, the billionaires. We're helping them. We're spending tax money to help them.
Yeah. Once I made a subprime mess, made it run. Brother, can you spare a billion? Oh, my God. But it goes back to the eternal question that you and I pursue from time to time, and that is the awareness of the American people. Now, according to the digest that I got from you, 81% of the American people think we're on the wrong track now?
Uh-huh.
The message is getting through? I mean, even through the filter of the so-called professional media?
Well, people see the pinching of the economy in their own lives, and they see the differential between what's going on in their lives and what's going on in these, you know, big guys' lives. So that much can't be hidden, especially with all the shows on television that show you the lifestyles of these rich people, you know. So that much can't really be hidden from people. What still worries me is that there's so little willingness to fight it. That's what bothers me.
And that's why I went to this bankruptcy story in the U.S. Senate. The day before this all happened, I had an action alert from an organization that is run by the AFL-CIO called Working America that alerted people to this crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, you know, please, you know, call your senator, Republican or Democrat, let them know that this really, really matters. And somebody out there wasn't listening, because, you know, there's nobody more motivated generally than folks who belong to organized labor.
Yeah.
And they will light up the phones. And I got the alert, and I, you know, pushed the buttons on my phone, and please, you know, called Rockefeller, called Bird. But no.
Well, they could have done, we don't know what the number of phone calls was. I wish some of these organizations would have special 800 numbers for people to call, you know, on specific things.
Yeah, sort of a redirect so that they could monitor, yeah.
Yeah, so that we could get those kinds of numbers.
Yeah, I don't mean monitor the calls, I mean monitor the number of the calls.
No, just find out how many calls were placed. You know, that would be all you would need to know. And then you would have the number tied to a specific issue, like American Idol vote 01 or 02.
Yeah.
You know?
The technology does exist.
Yes, it does. And it could be that a lot of people called, but that the influence of the moneyed class is just so overwhelming that it wouldn't matter how many people called. There could be a billion phone calls, and still Congress would go ahead and nurture those who nurture them. We got to get the money out of the process.
That is the basic
requirement for democracy, is to get the money out of the system.
And yet there was a specific portion of that mortgage crisis reform that the Senate was considering had to do with the fact of empowering bankruptcy judges to do for ordinary workaday Americans, extraordinary workaday Americans in my book,
mm-hmm.
to do for them what bankruptcy judges do for corporations every day
all
of the year.
All the time. You're right.
You take a company's debts. And if they're in a workout, he says, okay, well, you're paying this much. Well, now, so you've got this much liquidity and this much capital. Instead of paying this, you're going to pay this.
Right.
But the Senate couldn't find its way. And I don't know how much damnation to heap on the failure of it on our side, Caro. But, you know, once again, we let the Republicans run the show.
That's what they keep doing in the Senate. I don't know if the House is going to cave again, you know, the way they generally tend to do because of the Senate. I mean, Republicans fight to the death, and Democrats don't. That's just the bottom line.
And they, if you call them on it, they'll say, "Well, you know, we don't have the numbers."
I know.
So if we only
have a majority, we can't win because we only have a majority.
I know, and I keep but Caro, I keep remembering when the Republicans had control of the Senate, they hollered, you know, "Why do we have to have a supermajority? That's unfair." And yet they're, you know, like a dog returning to its, or a hog trying to get all four in the trough. Well, they're hypocrites, aren't they? Of course they are. What am I worrying about here?
Yeah.
But you know, the odds. Do we have a chance? Have you been following the numbers at all? Do we have a chance of putting 61 Democrats in the United States Senate this November?
You know, I have not dug into the senatorial races yet. I think it's likely that we'll pick up one or two seats, but not a huge number. You know, the Senate is a real artifact of the same thing, the same problem that created the Electoral College and so on, is that the
elitism.
It has to do with slavery. Okay, it started out with the need for slave states to have a certain amount of influence beyond their numbers of white folk, you know? And so that's why we ended up with two senators per state as opposed to anything that has to do with representation, and that the Electoral College reflects each there's one Electoral College member for each congressperson in a state, and then also for each of the senators.
Right, so a place like West Virginia that has three members of the House and two senators, we've got five Electoral College votes.
So lower population states actually have more say in who becomes president than higher population states have.
Would you say it's just time to get rid of the Electoral College?
I would say either that or make the make it representational, so that there's, you know, less of a chance that those two, that the senatorial vote makes a difference. But the main thing, the most important thing, we gotta get the money out of the system. I remember, you know, some time ago when we were talking about when the McCain-Feingold thing was up, and it was, you know, people were worrying about what the Supreme Court would say about it and this and that, and in certain decisions the Supreme Court has said that money is free speech, okay, that money...
Yeah, that's the one that makes me run screaming around the room.
Free speech. And one of my website readers wrote to me and said, well, does that mean that if you have $1 million and I have $1, that you have a million times more free speech than I do?
Why, yes,
and
yes.
I said, yes, that's exactly what it means. Exactly what it means, which is not what the founders intended at all.
Well, and this clean elections process has had successes in Maine and Arizona,
yes. Yes.
And New York's Manhattan's city government,
mm-hmm.
And I think there are some other places as well. I know that a lot of my activist friends here in West Virginia push it a little further every year, and every now and then we get things that come along that give it a little bit of impetus, like photographs of one of our Supreme Court justices swanning around the Monaco Riviera in the company of a coal baron who's got a case in front of him. Those two are now being investigated by the feds, thankfully, but it's the Bush Justice Department, so you can imagine where that's going to go.
Yeah.
But there's little bits of progress, but you always, and I guess it's, is it a deliberate strategy, do you think, Caro, that it's being done on a state and community level first, as an attempt to build the pyramid from the bottom up, as opposed to demanding it in Congress?
I don't know that there's a single mind behind that process, but But yes, that's definitely the way it has to be done. Because think about it. I mean, if you tried to start with President and Congress first, everybody there was elected by bold means. You know, lots of money, having to have lots of money. I mean, think about the amount of money that's being spent on this presidential campaign. Think about it.
I do think about that stuff, Caro, and it makes me a little bit sick when I see that so-and-so has raised this much money and that candidate's raised that much money, and then I see a story where people who had their entire lives ruined by Katrina are about to be subjected to a collection process because the private sector company that was hired to handle the trust funds overpaid.
Yes. Or people who have had a life-threatening illness and it has taken all of their resources and they lose their job. And that person is to be hounded into the grave too, you know, but no, we've got to have, tons and tons of money for candidates. Gotta have it. It's free speech.
I need me more of that free speech, Caro.
I need me some too. Another person wrote in and said, "Hey, could I tell my landlord I've paid you?" And he would say, "Oh, okay. Is money that kind of free speech?"
Exactly. Speaking of money, though, you know, how many times have we seen Dear Leader stand up on a podium somewhere or behind a podium? Well, I don't know, him being him, one of these days he's going to stand on the podium and talk about we've got to get these earmarks in Congress under control. The Democratic Congress is out of control with all of these earmarks. How many times is that? I mean, I know you've seen it. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
A little embarrassing news for Dear Leader this week, don't you think? Turns out that his conservative buddies are the ones with all four trotters in the trough, doesn't it?
You knew that, and I knew that, and most Americans know that. And for some reason, that doesn't push the outrage buttons either. I don't know why. But
well, is that one of those cases? Is it parallel, Caro, do you think, to that phenomenon that seems to affect uniquely Congress where, you know, the approval rating of Congress will be some sort of negative algebraic number, but if you poll people in a given district, oh, I love my congressman.
Or, you know, I come from Louisiana and was on a bus one day waiting for it to take off, and a security guard was talking to the bus driver, and they were talking about all the shenanigans that were going on with the, you know, the state government and all. Edwin Edwards was governor then, and of course I think he's finally out of prison now. But
Jesus.
Lots of corruption there, okay? And they were talking about this and that, and, you know, and selling licenses for the hospitals for personal gain, you know, and this kind of stuff and whatever. And, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, surely these guys are finally going to say, gee, that's a really bad thing. But no, one of them looked at the other one and said, well, I can't blame them. If I were in their position, I'd do the same thing.
Oh, God.
So that apparently is the mentality of at least some people.
It paints a pretty bleak picture of how far we have to go to do what you said and get the money, you know, get the money out of the process.
Oh.
I mean, I'm looking at these numbers, Caro, and they're... They're skull rattling numbers. The Republicans love to bang on John Murtha because of what he brings into his district, and yet according to this the Pig Book report, I love the title. Roger Wicker of Mississippi, Bill Young of Florida, two Republicans. They scored, not together but separately and respectively, $176.3 million and $169.5 million in earmarks for their district. That's a mind-numbing number.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, do we have a right to ask where it goes? I mean, I'm all for people having, you know, the volunteer fire department having a new truck, and they're not giving those away.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that stuff, but even when my congressman brings it in here in my district in West Virginia, I get a little bit kind of when I see that there's a couple of million dollars going for the Southern West Virginia Music Hall of Fame.
What I don't understand is why that kind of money has to come from the federal government. Why would the federal government be paying for fire engines and things like that? I mean, why wouldn't local governments be taking care of their own needs in that regard?
Because we don't have the money anymore. See, that goes back to George Bush. All that tax cut business wound up taking the money that would have been funneled downward toward the local governments where they could decide what needed what the most and dried that up.
Yeah. Well, government is bad.
I know. Republicans are the people that you elect. What did P.J. O'Rourke say? Republicans are the party who says government doesn't work, and then you put them in office and they prove it.
And they prove it.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
But it happened in the Senate, too. The top Senate porkers were Republicans as well. They pulled down a combined $1.8
billion. Amazing. And all of these billions, of course, are being borrowed from your children and their children and their children.
I know. I got youngins, and I keep looking at them going, you know, guys, college is not an option. Thou shalt go to college if it is humanly possible, and you're going to try to get a good paying job because, you know, you got a lot of, and, you know, I'm a realist with my kids, Caro, and I tell them, you know, you got a lot of debt to pay off.
Because
George Bush has gone absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach with your credit card.
Well, and our credit card, too, because you're old enough to remember in 1983 when they changed the contribution to FICA for Social Security benefits. The idea was that that we baby boomers would not only pay for our parents' retirement, but that we would pre-fund our own retirement because it would be such a huge burden on the country to handle us all, okay? So we said, okay, we'll make that deal. And then, lickety-split, they took that money that was supposed to be in a trust fund and said, oh, well, no, now it's part of the general revenues. And they started spending it on things like your Hall of Fame, your Music Hall of Fame, and stuff like that, and wars.
We got some great musicians here in West Virginia, Caro. I don't, and I'm not disparaging them, past, present, or future, but we got crushing poverty.
Yeah,
and we've got real and present needs that go well beyond the scope of a Music Hall of Fame, and it just blows me away. By the way, one of those pork barrel senators, the three Republican senators with their pork were Thad Cochran of Mississippi, Richard Backstabber Shelby of Alabama, who started out as a Democrat and then put his finger in the air and went, you know what, I'm feeling a little Republican today. And switched back when the Congress swapped in the 90s. The third one, of course, was, care to guess?
To who?
Ted Stevens.
Ted Stevens. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Still out there working on the bridge to nowhere.
And in fact, he even was having some kind of highway deal built in Florida. And he's Alaska, the very opposite corner of the country. So I'm sure there was some deal with his son, I believe, going on there. I don't know. I can't keep track of it all. All I know is that we got to put a stop to all of this. We got to put a stop to it. The priorities are just so screwed up. It's unbelievable.
Would you go so far, Caro, as to say that even looking at all the really honest to goodness pressing matters that face this country in coming years, would you go so far as to say that's job one?
Ooh.
I mean, is that the linchpin that lets the other real progress take place?
Well, economic development in a sustainable fashion that reduces to a great extent corruption. If you want to put it in those terms, yes, that certainly is job number one. And stopping wars is important for that too, because we've got trillions and trillions of dollars going into the pockets of George Bush's family and friends and contributors and all of these military-industrial complex folks.
That brings me to another story in the digest today. Yeah. Strategic assets, Congress's personal investments in America's defense.
Yes. Doesn't make you sick.
Honestly, there are days I open your digest, and I kick things because this is what you've published, the snippet says when General David Petraeus, the top U.S. You'll notice I didn't say betray us. The top U.S. military officer in Iraq comes to Capitol Hill next week to brief Congress. He'll be addressing lawmakers who have more than just a political stake in the five-year war. Along with their colleagues in the House and Senate, the politicians who will get a status report from the general and the U.S. ambassador to Iraq have as much as $196 million of their own money invested in companies doing business with the DOD.
Yeah. So what's their incentive to cut costs?
That would be none.
In fact, they have a disincentive, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Aircraft and weapons manufacturers, medical suppliers, soft drinks. And I don't know what the breakout is, but generally speaking, it is 25% of the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough to turn any piece of legislation, don't you think?
Well, it certainly is not the kind of thing that we want. I know years ago when I worked for Arthur Anderson in their consulting division, that was back when it was a good thing to have Arthur Anderson on your resume, you know.
Yeah.
They had a rule, even if you were in the consulting division, you could not invest in any company that they had any auditing relationship with, maybe even an IT relationship with either, a consulting relationship. I don't know. But it was obviously a huge list. Now, I don't think that would be possible maybe for Congress because there's so much that everybody does business with the government, or everybody is trying to push the government into doing things that are especially for them. So maybe that's not feasible, but certainly blind trusts and electing ordinary people to Congress, for one thing. Let's don't have all those millionaires in there.
And where did the stock in the portfolios come from? That's the next question.
Yeah, you got to ask questions like that. How did Colin Powell become a millionaire, a multimillionaire? Please. The man was a general. He was in the military for...
Yeah, I mean, generals aren't living on beans or anything.
But they're not rich either.
No, I mean...
How did those people get rich?
Speaking tours, lemonade stands. Yeah.
Why didn't I get rich?
Ask a Republican, a good Calvinist Republican, and he'll tell you, well, you know, God doesn't like you. this is an astonishing statistic. 25% of Congress, because when I think to things like the Iraq funding resolutions that have gone through, and how easy, and I know a number of people, it would, instead of passing another bill for George to sign after he vetoed the first one, it would seem the common sense thing would be to say, well, we gave you a bill, you didn't sign it, you vetoed it,
so
we're not doing any more bills.
Yeah, bye.
However, when 25% of your membership stands to lose on their bottom line, I mean, maybe we could
set it up so that Congress could only invest in things that we, the people, approved of. For example, suppose we said that members of Congress could only invest in technologies that will fight global warming or enhance our green, the greenness of the earth in some way. That might change things.
Congress being Congress, even that makes me nervous, Caro.
You have to figure out some boondoggles.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I can well imagine that somebody from, say, a coal state would say, yeah, I got, look, new green coal. Wait a minute, they're already doing that. They're calling that clean coal.
Did you see that the Air Force is looking for, is going to try to build jets that that run off
liquid coal,
fuel made from coal? And I go, oh my God.
And see, we've been following that for months here in West Virginia, those of us who are paying attention, Caro, because it requires something on the order of 4 gallons of water to produce 1 gallon of liquid coal. And after you're done with the water that you make the liquid coal out of,
it's poisoned.
You can't do anything with the water ever again, and you have to, like, pump it into the bowels of the earth.
Right.
And that's, how can you call that clean or green or a part of America's energy independence when you're actively poisoning a part of America?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, again, I come back to that statistic time and time again, 25% of Congress. 25% of Congress was sufficient to make sure that we didn't have any benchmarks, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if a lawyer, and I'm just using this because they're handy and they're so beaten upon.
They need to be beaten upon.
Well, the bad ones do. I'm really sympathetic to plaintiff's lawyers because, you know, folks can't go out and pay $250 an hour. So the guys who take the contingent fees, I feel a little bit more solicitous toward. But if a lawyer was in court actively pursuing a case in which he was heavily invested, his opponent would be able to move that he be removed from the case, and he would win because it would clearly be a case of self-dealing. We've even seen cases in the federal judiciary where a district judge will be involved in a case and recuse himself because he has those stocks in his portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, am I to understand that? If you compare the rules and how they work, am I to understand that congressional members of Congress, senators, members of the House, am I to understand that they're more trustworthy than a judge? Because the fact that we don't...
Are any of them trustworthy?
Well, clearly it's a question of scale and of degree.
Yeah.
But these guys don't have to disclose them. Well, I'm voting in favor of this, and I'm invested in the company I'm voting in favor of.
And my contributions to my campaign slush fund...
Yeah, and by the way, and that reminds me, a question for you that you might know the answer to. When a congressman retires, like all these Republicans are bailing out this year, and they've got these huge war chests, do they get to keep them?
I believe that they do get to keep some of it, and that bothers me, too. That bothers me a lot, because they're already getting these huge pensions from we the public, you know. And offices forever, I think, paid for by us taxpayers and all this kind of stuff. And it just keeps going on and on and on. They keep voting themselves raises, and nobody else but the top 1% are getting raises. And
so, in other words, there is absolutely zero disincentive for Congress people not to accept bribes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what we're down to, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're talking quid pro quo, which is the essence of a bribe or doing the wrong thing or illegal activity, illicit activity, because you take your campaign donations and then you vote for the person
the donor
that gave you those donations. I mean, that's bribery.
I mean, if I go out into a rural West Virginia county with a trunk load of pints of Four Roses, and I tell a fella I'm going to give you $10 and a pint, and you're going to vote this slate, my butt is up the river on a federal charge, and so is the guy selling his vote, right?
Oh, wait. It wouldn't be if you were paying off the sheriff and the county attorney and the judges and the whoever and the whoever. See, if y'all were all good buddies, if you know what I mean, and you were all scratching each other's backs and you were all helping each other out and all having these poker parties and all these good times, barbecues and stuff, see, you wouldn't have a problem.
God.
And that's what it is, and that's what Washington is, just on a bigger scale.
But it is a federal crime to buy and sell votes in America, and yet somehow it's not a crime to buy and sell votes in Congress.
Well, it actually is a crime to directly bribe somebody, and there was somebody
it's that line between what constitutes direct and indirect. I can't see how a contribution to a PAC is any less direct than buying just giving him a bag of money.
Giving it to him, giving him the cash, yeah.
Because either way, you're giving him the cash.
The same. To you, it's the same. To the courts, apparently, it's not the same.
They must have different alien brains in the courts, or something happens to them when they get appointed. That's it. Something happens to them when they get appointed, isn't it?
Well, it has developed over the years. It has gotten freer and freer and freer. See, here's the big problem is that we no longer hold people to a certain standard. We no longer worship people who have a lot of money, regardless of how they got it, regardless of who committed suicide while they were on their way up from being stomped on and ruined and whatever, regardless of anything. The only measure in this society is how much money you have. We no longer admire people who sacrifice their a good part of their lives to do good things for other people. And I'm not saying that's the only way we humans can be, because we can be different from that. But it would take the will of a lot of people to say, you know, this is all crap. Here we are busting our butts, 7 days or 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, still trying to raise a family, still trying to make a living, trying to be a decent person and do the right thing, and everything's against us in trying to do that, and we're sick of it. We want quality of life, and we want a better life, and that does not mean scraping for more dollars. But it would take a lot of people to come to that realization, and most people don't come to that realization on their own. You know, it will take some leader that says, this is all garbage. We are not doing the right thing. We're not putting ourselves in a position to be happy. Because we know now from studies, I don't know if I put this one into the digest that you get, but we now have studies that show happiness is from cooperating with people, from working with people, from doing things for one another, including giving away money. Giving it away is what makes us happy.
In many ways,
what people spend their lives doing is getting, get me. I gotta have more. Get.
What Wordsworth said: we lay waste our days getting and spending.
Yeah.
So that sounds like fundamental human happiness is largely a function of the same thing that creates or creates what passes for happiness in other primate cultures.
Yes, yes, absolutely. We're related to them.
Cousins. Well, shh, don't tell the fundies.
I didn't come from no monkey.
Yeah, and more's the no, obviously you were descended from a snake.
I like that. That's
yeah, funny. I'm hanging on to that one. Sometimes
yeah,
they just come right off the cuff. well, okay, let's move over to a couple of media things real quick just for the fun of it. I saw this earlier in the week and I saw it on your digest as well. Do you think, I mean, just speculating, this is pure, shameless, more like mainstream media speculation, do you think there's actually any paid bloggers out there? Do you think anybody in the right wing is getting the DOD check?
Oh, yeah. I don't know about DOD, but there are lots of paid bloggers. Oh, yes.
No, I mean, this military report secretly recruit or hire bloggers story.
But that's only just the military. The companies buy blogs and bloggers all the time. The one way to make a good living is to start an anti-whoever website, anti-Exxon or Exxon Watch or something or other, and, you know, and push it, and get real, real popular and everything, and have Exxon buy you out.
Gee whiz. Well, I mean,
money is the only thing that's important in our culture. Don't you get that, Bob?
You know, my skull's pretty doggone thick, but it's beginning. The light's beginning to dimly flicker a little bit for me, Caro. Oh, where are the buyers? I mean, never mind. No, because I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. Let's say it together. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't. But, I mean,
wouldn't think of it. That's my problem. See, I don't, you know, I keep, stupid me, I keep trying to do the right thing. You know, I keep trying to promote what I believe in. And that is not the way to make a lot of money, as I have found out.
Lord, Lord, Lord. You know, we know that the Bush administration, who was the talk radio guy? That they paid on the marriage initiative.
Armstrong Williams,
absolutely. And then there was the phony lady reporter in the red suit reporting on DHHR initiatives.
Oh, and lots of other things as well. There have been lots of supposed news reports that were created in the labs of various government agencies, the media labs of various government agencies that went out as news reports.
So it really comes as no surprise to know that a couple of
Iraqi journalists
said good things
about the United States.
And even after all this, and that's the funny thing about this DOD story, this Pentagon story, is that this report that was prepared for the Joint Special Operations University Blogs and Military Information Strategy admits that, I mean, it places itself in a time frame, Caro, where they've already been busted in Iraq for this, and they're still running this flag thing up the pole to see if anybody salutes.
But again, we get to the point where that's what Republicans do. Remember when there was this total information awareness and
yep.
your meter readers were going to be checking to see what kind of books you read and stuff? Okay. Well, they said, oh, okay, everybody doesn't like that. Okay, we're stopping that program. And then they went around behind the scenes and did it somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what Republicans do. They don't give up.
Oh.
They don't stand on, I mean, they stand on principle, but their principles are power, greed.
They stand on principles, but their principles are in the sewer.
There you go.
So, but, you know, I read that story, and I couldn't help thinking, gee, I wonder if Michelle Malkin's gotten a check.
I don't know. You know, I don't know about those. I don't think she needs a check from the government or anybody. Her website is one of the most popular ones, and therefore I'm sure she makes a lot of money from advertising.
They're a little, you know, a little operating overhead for the fine folks at Free Republic.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. And you know, one of these days, you know, 20, 30 years from now, the compendium of the Bush administration ethical, moral, and financial abuses will be released. And 20 or 30 years from now, young historians will look at it and go, duh.
how could they let that happen?
What'd you expect?
What everybody is going to say is, how did they let that happen? How did they let the entire Treasury be raided six times? How did they let themselves be talked into these insane wars? How did they, you know, it's going to be one thing after another after another. And here's what really scares me. Really scares me. And I've said this a number of times in my newsletter, so I know this is not news to you. That George Bush is going to use every function, feature, whatever he can think of government to get John McCain elected. I'm just convinced of it, because for two reasons. One is, he wants a continuation of the Bush administration, which McCain would be. He would be the third term of the Bush administration. And also because George Bush wants to stay out of prison.
He wants to get out of jail free card.
Yeah. And it's possible that with a Democrat coming in, they might start looking into things and whatever. I mean, you know, knowing how feeble the Democrats have been, I don't know. But there's at least the danger, and there's less of a danger with a Republican, and perhaps even, who knows, maybe they even made a deal with John McCain. I mean, how did John McCain come from nowhere in the polls and no money?
He was so bad off during the primary process, Caro, that he was blaming the gayness of his sweaters for his poor performance. No joke. And you know, is it just because Rudy Giuliani was so loathsomely, you know, a subject, a noun, a verb in 9/11? Is it because the sleazy oiliness of Mitt Romney oozed through our television screens? Is it because we recognized right away that Ron Paul was from some, you know, not Mars, but maybe one of the moons of Mars? that Mike Huckabee, we could see the serpent that he was handling invisibly whenever he was on screen, and they just sort of defaulted to him.
I think, and this is my own personal opinion, I think Rove and Bush have been helping McCain all along, and how they did it, how they manipulated things, I don't know, but you know, all the revelations about Giuliani that apparently most Americans weren't aware of, and you know, Rove is a genius at timing those things. And
well, do you think maybe we find out a little bit about this when Don Siegelman goes to Congress and testifies?
Find out about how they might have helped Rove. Well, we might find out some things about Rove, yeah.
And how he works, and how he works his miracles. Let's see. We've got a little bit of time left in our conversation, and we have a caller on the line. Let's see who we've got. Hi, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
Hey, Luke. How are you?
Fine. I just got in, so I'm sorry. I'm catching y'all cold. I'm not 100% sure what you're talking about.
Oh,
I apologize.
No worries. No worries at all. We'll talk
a
little bit later.
Media tonight.
Pardon?
As usual.
Pardon?
Are we on media?
More or less. We just verged over into Karl Rove.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I noticed, have you noticed, and I wrote this on one, to somebody over at Washington Post on one of their talks. I said, have you noticed how MSNBC no longer has any military experts on to talk? I said, isn't it interesting how all their military experts apparently have all picked Hillary? So apparently they're now kind of told not to come on the network.
Well, you know, it's.
But you know what I mean? You'd normally see Larry Johnson, or you'd see Ray McGovern, or some, you know, a whole bunch of different people when we had all this stuff with Iraq going on, and all they've had on is just their so I call it the usual suspects.
And
yeah, I have noticed that, except that I don't watch MSNBC anymore. I can't watch any of them.
I taped it was on just to catch a few bits, you know, see if they have something maybe different and high speed through it, because like you say.
But you're right. Most of the military, like something like 50 retired military, admiralty, folks like that have endorsed Hillary Clinton. And yes, I don't know about Ray McGovern, but I do know for a fact that Larry Johnson is a Clinton person.
But Larry, I found out a little something that Larry made me a little nervous about. Larry saw a title of a piece of a blog post that he wrote not too long back.
Oh,
and
are you talking about the one that had a racial
crazy
epithet in it?
A racial epithet and the F word.
Yes, well, that was the title of a speech given by a black person, either a speech.
Actually, it's the title of a rap song.
Okay.
And what
okay
happened was somebody had used it, and, somebody in the Obama camp, I believe, had used it, but had cleaned it up. had substituted words for those words, and he wanted everybody to know what those actual words were.
Yeah.
Well, I went and looked up the blog post, and it's a little disturbing. Because you know this divisive stuff that's out there, you know, we can tear ourselves all to pieces over this stuff, and it's when I saw I'm pulling it up here, it's a long way into my tabs. When he says whites aren't the only ones who don't fare well in these songs, the bitches and hoes don't do too good either, even the so-called Reverend Wright. So-called Reverend Wright. I'd expect that from a right-winger, so-called Reverend Wright. And I'm trying desperately, for my part, to focus on the problem. And it's what you mentioned a minute ago, Caro. The problem's John McCain.
Yeah.
And what he has in store for America.
Here's the concern I have, as you may well know, and I believe Larry has as well, and it's that we can't be thinking necessarily about what we believe, we Democrats, or what we are willing to forgive, or what shocks us or does not shock us. We have to be thinking about what Americans are willing to deal with, okay, what the vast majority of Americans are willing to deal with. And if we simply say that, oh, none of this matters because it doesn't matter to me, are we helping George Bush and Karl Rove elect John McCain in November? That's what we have to be concerned about.
Well, the problem I have right now is, and Bob knows this, we were both John Edwards supporters.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Well, the problem I have though is the mainstream media is giving us a nice skewed view of what's going on. I mean, you know, for this last 2-3 weeks, all they've wanted to talk about is Hillary and Bosnia.
Yeah.
I noticed that no one ever talks about Obama and the NAFTA story. No one talks about the fact that when the thing with Reverend Wright started, Obama said he'd never heard it. Then we have the story about his dad and the Kennedy thing.
Right.
We hear that.
Right.
And it's like they're sitting there going, well, you can't trust Hillary Clinton. It's like, well, fine, let's also hear you all discuss, you know, what the problems are with Senator Obama too.
On the other hand, however, Luke, there's the media's Reverend Wright-gasm's been going on for a month now.
No, but I'm talking those. They've been hitting Hillary on honesty.
Right.
They haven't hit Obama on honesty.
And I'm with you, Luke. I agree. I think there's been an extreme bias there. That whatever Hillary says or does is wrong, bad, awful, and contrived and connived and whatever. And
that's an extension. And Caro, that's an extension of what's been going on since 1992, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, that's Dan Burton shooting watermelons to prove that she killed Vince Foster, for God's sake.
That's what I've been trying to convince people of, is that a lot of people who are Democrats and call themselves progressives and whatever don't realize how much of that stuff has infiltrated their own consciousness. And if they think that, you know, that they shouldn't have to defend Hillary Clinton because they think she's bad or all of this stuff that's been pounded into them by the right wing and then by the mainstream media. And then when that same thing starts to happen, if Obama is the candidate and it starts to happen to him, then they're going to say, oh, that's terrible. You can't do that. And you know, and I'll say, look, when you didn't stand up for Hillary Clinton, you lost all your grounds to be able to stand up for Obama. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, the thing that gets to me, though, is if you look at this now, this is virtually a copy of 2000. Where
yes,
they did
you
the,
are
they
so
did the
right, Luke.
Gore. They tried to, you know, the press tried to make Bill Bradley the candidate, and they called yes. Gore every name in the book.
Yes. Yes, Luke, you are exactly right. And I find it very interesting that the people who have been fighting the right wing, the real right wing, the longest, you know, Gene Lyons, the Arkansas reporter.
Every Wednesday.
Okay. Gene Lyons and Bob Summerby, who was
Al Gore's roommate.
Al Gore's roommate time. In college and who writes the Daily Howler and has been doing that since, what, 98?
And, well, and the thing is,
and
the
Bart
Daily Howler.
Kopp, who has, Bart Kopp, who has been on the Internet since 1996, all three of those agree with me that the problem is it's the right wing stupid and that we Democrats cannot be mouthing that same stuff that those right wingers put out there years ago and that keeps reverberating and reverberating and reverberating because it's going to happen to your guy.
Go to Bob Summersby's place where he's got his archive and start back from like in the late 90s.
His incomparable archives, yes.
And I mean, it will just absolutely blow your mind to things that you forgot, people have forgotten, you know what I mean?
That
and go
is
through
right.
And he'll tell you some of the stories that the mainstream press has done.
That is right. Mainstream media, yep. And in fact, the harpies that covered the Gore campaign, C.C. Connolly for the Washington Post and Catherine Q. Kit Seeley for the New York Times, they tried to outdo each other in their snarkiness and their meanness.
Excuse the term I'm going to use, but as they were referred to in those years, the bitches on the bus.
I hadn't heard that term, but yeah.
But you know, I mean, isn't it interesting, though, that the Washington Post and the Times are always like, well, we got rid of Stephen Glass and all this stuff, but you know what, amazingly enough, C.C. Connelly still works for them.
Yeah, she does. She doesn't do politics anymore.
She was caught changing Gore's answer at a speech one time. You know, that's the Love Canal speech.
Yeah. She made up stuff about him. Mm-hmm. And so did Kit Seeley.
Yeah,
I think Kit Seeley was the one that made up the thing about the Union lullaby.
Yeah.
When Al Gore said, my mother sang the Union lullaby.
Oh, God, that
you
thing.
Know, you know, he says
they
sang.
Well, and the one that's just
and then
bad.
She said, well, he couldn't have done that because he was, you know, that was only written after he was blah, blah, blah. Well, if you listen to the tape, you could tell it was a joke. And everybody in the audience laughed. They thought it was funny.
Well, the one I was like was
that's the Dean scream. It's the same school of thought that brings us a direct line feed off a microphone of a scream that couldn't be heard at the back of a room.
Absolutely.
This is what
absolutely and the Purple Heart band-aids on their faces at the Republican convention, vicious, mean, awful, horrible stuff. Democrats, we can't let ourselves keep falling for this stuff.
And that's why I keep saying, you know, focus the laser beam. Focus the laser beam. John McCain is over there.
Yes, right.
Talk issues. Be passionate about it. But, you know, oh, God, I'm going to hate myself for this. The Randy Rhodes thing.
Yeah.
I am not concerned about Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is a big girl, and she's in a business that requires alligator hide for skin. If you cannot, you know. If you can't take the hit, you know, Harry Truman, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. Barack Obama, same thing. John McCain, same thing. Not worried about any of them. I'm worried about the followers who say, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to, you know, she wants, and they said, and I'm not going to vote if it's not my candidate. And that's how we get President McCain.
I have to disagree with you on the Randy Rhodes thing. Just imagine that if a Clinton supporter who had a national platform used the N-word against Barack Obama, imagine the hullabaloo.
You mean like Larry Johnson?
Well, that's
not a national platform.
That's not a radio or a TV show. What would happen if...
But she wasn't on her national platform. She was in a... She was
as a representative of her company.
She was in a comedy club that you had to pay to get into.
But she was
a fundraiser for Obama. A fundraiser for the station.
Yeah, for the station.
Her show.
Right.
Okay.
She didn't, you know, unlike Don Imus, she didn't say it on the air. Now, I don't approve of it myself. I'm on the internet here, and I can say any blue word that I want to. And sometimes I get so overwrought that I do.
like I say, there are rules, and you have to follow rules.
What are the rules in a comedy club, Luke?
Randy works as an Air America representative.
Randy works for a company, and that company has the right to say the First Amendment doesn't apply to businesses.
It does not.
Okay?
And I
but if you're there representing Randy Rhodes, that's fine. But you're there representing Air America.
Right. That's what I'm. Yeah, I agree with you, Caro. It is a business matter. It is a, you know, it's you know, again, it's that line from The Godfather, you know, tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business. Air America has that right, and the First Amendment, you know, God, I remember back when John Rocker, the Braves pitcher, made those awful comments about being on the subway in New York. And everybody, oh, what happened to his First Amendment right to be a racist? And I remember calling the local sports yacker and saying, hey, buddy, the First Amendment does not apply to the Braves management.
Right.
So, you know, that's absolutely the truth. And lawyers being lawyers, I can imagine Air America's lawyers going,
No, it's not so much a matter for the lawyers. It's a matter for half of the Democratic Party supports Hillary Clinton and half of the Democratic Party supports Barack Obama.
Right.
You can't afford to completely and totally and utterly alienate one of those halves. And I think some people on that network have done a real good job of riding that balance. I think Tom Hartman and Lionel have done a very good job of doing that. So you don't have to express a preference, and you don't have to, you certainly don't have to use the harshest words in the English language against one of the candidates. You don't have to do that.
Which goes to my thesis. I'm not worried about damage done to Hillary Clinton, and I'm not worried about damage done to Barack Obama or anybody when all these things go out there. I'm worried about how their supporters tend to set their hair on fire over things.
And to me, the setting the hair on fire is the use of that kind of language.
And let me just throw one more theory out there on this, because I've given it quite a bit of thought. Air America has not had any decent PR in about two years. They never had. And
all they ever had was that first article, because I was associated with the Drobnys then, that first article in the New York Times, Rudenberg, is that his name, wrote the first article about them, and man, there were waves upon waves of phone calls and emails and trying to, you know, people trying to get involved and loving it and wanting to help in one thing and another. And but since then, zilch.
Right. So just to follow on that theory, Air America hasn't had any decent PR. There is an old saying, and I'm sure you're probably well familiar with it, Caro.
No,
there is no such thing as bad PR. Air America and Randy Rhodes just got some of the best PR they could possibly get, and they didn't have to pay a penny for it. The hair on fire Hillary people have probably run and donated money to Hillary's campaign, and the reactionaries to those, the Obama people, have probably done the same. So it's a win on all four counts.
Well, and guess who the other people are talking about it, getting their names mentioned though too.
Who's that?
People over at Fox Noise.
Well,
because you know they've been beating the drum on this thing for the last couple of days.
Absolutely, and that's my primary objection, is putting bullets in the right wing's gun. Because, you know, they got all the money in the world to buy all the bullets they need. They don't need us loading the muskets for them.
Oh.
So, you know, that's the nature of my objection.
Hmm.
But mercy. you know, I spent so much time on this story in the last two nights that I've actually let real news go.
And I
looked up this morning.
You have Randy fatigue?
No, I don't have Randy fatigue. I have Bob, what a chump you are, embarrassment. I mean, the least I could do is send a bill to Air America for this.
Yeah, you would think.
So you know, I've been had.
Yeah.
And frankly, so many people have gotten so very, very upset about this have been had too.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Well, see, to me, that is the problem with putting this kind of invective into a campaign. You know, there's no reason why, you know, when I decided to support Hillary after Edwards dropped out, it was a very rational decision. I looked at the platforms. Her platform is the more progressive. That was my decision. Okay. But when they started accusing her and Bill Clinton of being racist and all of this other stuff that came along and she got beaten up in the media, that was when I said, I'm a rabid supporter now. And they did that.
I understand that. I understand
well,
it.
That's my main reason. I guess if I had to pick the reason why I picked Hillary to follow now is because of the fact that the media is so lined up against her.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like, guys, you're supposed to be there to give people. I mean, I know there's some, you're supposed to have some people there doing commentary and all that. That's fine. But, you know, it would be nice to have a little bit of news from both sides. So, if you, like I said,
and to that.
MSNBC. Find me somebody on that channel that's even being fairly neutral towards Hillary.
And to that extent, that is, like I said, that is a manifestation of the fact, and I think she, I mean, she's a mighty smart woman. She had to know this going in, that she was going to have to run her campaign with one foot in a bucket.
Oh, I'm sure she did know that. But,
I mean, as a hillbilly, Caro, I saw that editorial cartoon that you copied onto your digest. I am a proud hillbilly. And I mean, I'm very serious about it. Some of my dearest friends in the mountaintop removal movement wear T-shirts that say "Save the Endangered Hillbilly."
Yeah.
And I take real umbrage at smarmy editorial cartoonists who do editorial cartoons of the Clintons sitting on a cabin porch, and Bill's an old coon dog, and Hillary's got a corn cob pipe in her mouth. And Chelsea's out front saying, "If I can tolerate it, you can."
Yeah.
Yeah, that pisses me off because of what an absolute finger in the eye it is to people like me who sit here and have our houses rocked by bomb explosions on mountaintop removal jobs. You know what? I dare that cartoonist to come and drink the water from the wells in Mingo County, West Virginia. I dare him.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like you were saying a minute ago. It's what they call the Clinton rules. You know, it's like Bill said years ago. He said, "If anything goes right, they tell people I did it by accident, and if anything goes wrong, I was up nights planning it."
Yeah.
And that goes back to John Kennedy. Success has 1,000 fathers, but failure is an orphan.
Yeah. Well,
that applies even more so to the Clintons.
Yeah, probably.
Let me go on. You let you get some other people on. I want to call in early because I know you've had trouble with people, everybody calling in at the last second.
Well, it's 15 phone calls between 8:45 and 9. You know.
All right, y'all have
my fingers get numb pushing buttons. Luke, take care, brother.
Howdy.
Bye now. Our buddy Luke in the hills of East Tennessee.
We're in sync.
Yeah. All right. Well, Caro, thank you for a great hour and change. This Friday, and we'll talk to you again soon, and have a wonderful, warm, sunshiny weekend.
Thank you, and I hope you do, too.
I could use it. Bye, Caro.
Bye.
Later. Our good friend Carolyn Kay, Caro from MakeThemAccountable.com. A lot of good stuff over there. You know, the story... That story that 25% of Congress is heavily invested in the defense industry. You know, it's the kind of thing that you suspect, but you don't want to admit to yourself, and then you go, "Oh, hell, it's in front of my face, and I can't get away from it anymore." So we'll take a quick break and a little musical interlude. We'll come back and start hour two a little bit late. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn, and we'll be back.
There was a Joe leaning on the back door, couple jills and had their eyes on a couple bills, and the eyes were stating they was waiting to get their hands on some easy money. They flip a dime, one says, well, I'll take heads this time. One step up, one step back, one loosened her shoulder strap. She couldn't speak, her knees got weak. Oh, she could almost taste it. Easy money. There was this old black cow sending an old black Cadillac. And Joe smelled sweet, so she curls up her boyfriend's feet. She says, I got a plan. Listen, Sam, how'd you like to make some of that easy money? Oh, you say yeah. Oh, yeah. Just tell me what you want me to do. She says, baby, you can trust me. Oh, baby, but you must be hiding in my room at a quarter to two. Well, the cat told the boy, come on up to the room. Jill had set the bait and she wasn't gonna sit around and wait. But this guy was wise to all of the lies, and he flies out the door with easy money. Oh, because there ain't no man who got the money in his hand, who got any of that bread by being slow in the head. The easier it looks, the harder it looks, and there ain't no such thing. Easy money.
Your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
God, I hate it when I have to come barreling and bolting back into the studio trying to dive in behind the board. I thought that song was longer than that. That's why God made Stairway to Heaven. 18 and a half minutes past the hour. Thanks, you guys, for jumping in on the April fundraising. We are approaching $400. Maybe by tonight be on the way to five. You know what? Being a quarter of the way before the end of the first week in April is a good sign. And I've been told that let's see. I'm trying to push buttons here and see if I can make it. All right, let me go to the phones. Anyway, thanks for getting us off to a pretty decent little start for the beginning of the month of April. Program note. I'm guessing I won't be here a week from Monday. And it's possible next Friday's a no-go. I think I'll be here Friday, a week from today. Taking a little road trip to tell some folks about mountaintop removal. And that will necessitate my being gone for a couple of days. So I'll miss a day or so. My sincere apologies. And try to make it up to you somehow. Lord, this is getting confusing. Too many things blinking at one time. I need a producer.
God, I can't wait till school's out and Agnes comes back here to play with me again. She's my favorite playmate, you know. Not that way. We're pals. We're buddies. We have fun. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm okay. Like I said, I feel a little bit like a chump, but I'll get over it.
I was just thinking it would be nice if Carolyn Kay could maybe fill in while Randy's away.
You know what? She could do it in a heartbeat, too.
It would be great.
And you know, she does a wonderful job there with Make Them Accountable. I think Caro's done some radio work in the past. I mean, obviously you can tell she's got the presence for it.
Yep. And what else? I don't know. there's been a lot going on, hasn't there?
It's been a very busy week, and like I said, I got sucked into this tempest in a teapot.
Yeah.
And I feel really stupid about it. But you know, there's real news out there. There's been quite a bit of it. Some of the stuff that I raised with Caro in the first hour, I could eat nails and spit rivets over the great big, with the middle finger that we got from Congress, that families struggling to stay in their homes got from Congress. And I know that there were a lot of good Democrats who supported giving bankruptcy judges the same power to help homeowners that they ordinarily have to help businesses. But once again, the Republican Party showed what it thinks of people who bust their butts every day to keep a roof over them and over themselves and their children's heads.
Yep.
You were going to say, go ahead.
Yeah, we need to once again demand our rights, you know, for housing and, you know, these things that they've labeled as, you know, collectivism and socialism and all these terrible words that we must shy away from. Ironically, you know, some of the most vociferous opponents of collectivism are involved in collectives themselves. I mean, the military is, Chalmers Johnson has said, the closest we've come to sort of state socialism. And, you know, the government being very much involved in your life.
What's a gated McMansion community for the uber rich if it's not a collective, Preston?
Great point.
And the fact of the matter is, all these things that the right wing wants to create as privatized functions that can only be afforded by people in an income bracket that they predetermine.
Yeah.
It's a socialism of its sort, but it's a pernicious one.
Yeah, and you know, they're also so much against regulations. Maybe from the government. Usually they're talking about government regulations and how important individuality is, but there again, we set up these communities where there are endless rules on how to keep your lawn, what you can grow there, what color you can paint your house, can you have a car parked out front that you're working on, and on and on and on. And, my nephew actually lived in a community like that around Scottsdale, Arizona, and one day he told me he went to the wrong house because you know they looked a bunch alike. But
I always remember. What kind of a phrase is that? I frequently recall a story from several years back where some people in a community in some western state, you know, one of those, where we raise ourselves by our own bootstraps, rugged individualism, had a ballot initiative to defund the public library. A bunch of Republicans and libertarians got together, and they were going to shut down the public library because it's no function of government to be paying for a library. Let people buy their own books.
Mm-hmm.
And And the thing is, that presupposes that there are people out there that anybody who deserves a book can buy a book.
Yep.
And I loathe that stuff, Preston. I hate it.
Yep.
But then again, it fits right in hand with what they so desperately want. They want a slave culture. The Republican Party, the Libertarians, or whatever, they want a slave culture where there are people who are so desperately poor that they will work for extremely low wages, and then they imagine themselves as part of the ruling class.
Yep. That's right. And the ruling class, you know, maybe will help them out, and people are desperate. And so, you know, they collaborate with things that otherwise they wouldn't normally. And, yeah, it's very sad how they play us against each other and different.
But yet these people, what I don't get, Preston, these people, the uber rich, the folks that people like David K. Johnston write about, and show us how much we're being ripped off. These people breathe the same air that we do.
Yeah,
they largely drink the same water. They are as killable by floods and fires and storms.
And environmental pollution.
Sure. Now bear in mind, the toxic waste pit never goes over by the Tony gated community.
True.
It always goes up some holler somewhere or over in the section of town where, you know, those people live.
Right, right.
But it leaches through the ground.
Yeah,
and it speaks to, I saw a statistic. Have you seen this, Preston? There are rising cancer rates among the super rich.
I hadn't seen that, but I did just see an article today, I think, or yesterday, on Common Dreams about how they've been doing this study of breast cancer rates in Massachusetts, and they found that Cape Cod actually has higher rates of breast cancer. I need to think, you know, people go there to, you know, breathe in the fresh air. But it turns out there's like 13 different carcinogens floating around that air. And,
well, you know that I've been reading Jared Diamond's book, Collapse.
Yes.
I'm almost at the end of it. My finger's really tired from following the little words because it's taken a while. No, I'm kidding. But he was talking. Pardon?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Okay. He was talking about some of the most isolated islands on Earth, and they are, a couple of hundred miles away from Henderson and Pitcairn Islands, and it's about as isolated as you can get and still be on the same planet. And yet, an environmental team went and surveyed, and they found one piece of human garbage per meter.
Mm-hmm.
On the beaches of the most isolated islands on Earth. And it was all kinds of stuff, and it wasn't all necessarily nautical. You know, the tennis shoes.
Yeah.
Plastic bottles, the tubing, on and on and on. And that really says something, doesn't it, Preston, about the pervasive nature of our ability to poison this place. I mean, these are dots. I mean, if you fire up Google Earth, for instance, and you look for Pitcairn Island, and then you go out from there and Henderson Island, and you go out from there, and I mean, you got to zoom and zoom and zoom and zoom and zoom before these little itsy bitsy pinpoint dots come into focus.
Yeah.
And there's nothing but miles and miles and miles of open ocean around them, and some little boys. Reebok washes up on its shore.
Yep. And there, I think the blubber of polar bears, that's some of the most toxified flesh there is. Mother's, you know, breast milk here in the U.S., it's polluted. I think Bill Moyers, about 4 years ago, had his own blood checked and for his own chemical load, and he was really bothered by it.
The Inuit, Preston, the Inuit. Again, the most remote people on Earth. Their mother's milk was tested, and it has so much mercury in it that in the United States it would be classified as hazardous waste.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they've got humongous cancer clusters, and they're nowhere near a power plant. They're nowhere near a nuclear reactor. Nowhere near a grocery store. Nowhere near nothing.
Yep. So we've got some real issues of security, you know, to deal with. And so that issue is something that liberals and Democrats and concerned people of all sorts can claim again for themselves instead of having it defined for us by, you know, weapons contractors. You know,
sure, because frankly, my kids are at a far greater risk from that kind of thing than they are a 6'6" Arab on a portable dialysis machine in a cave in Pakistan somewhere.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
But you can't convince a Republican that, and that's what... And that's the eternal debate. We got into some of it last night. How many of these people do you just write off and try to get the job done without them?
Yeah, true. And how many other people can you collaborate with to achieve something better? I mean, I think it was the March issue of the Sun magazine has an excellent interview with a guy named Van Jones, who's working on a project in Oakland that's very much like that project you were talking about, I think Sustainable South Bronx.
Okay,
and you met somebody who worked with that project pushing for environmental justice and creation of green jobs and urban gardens in inner cities and so forth.
And lo and behold, I saw an interesting piece of video you might want to look up, Preston.
Okay.
And it comes from the same area, the South Bronx, and it is kids talking about the issue of race.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty prominently featured on a whole lot of websites fairly recently, and it is some profound stuff. And on the day that we mark, and I haven't said a word yet, and shame on me, we're halfway through the program. I haven't, you know, this is a very, very grim anniversary.
Yeah.
This is 40 years that we've been without Dr. King, because he was taken from us by virtue. Even if there wasn't some pernicious government plot to directly assassinate him, everything that the government did fanned the flames of whoever killed him. You know, the family even says they don't think James Earl Ray did it now.
Yeah. We had the local host here in Denver, Jay Marvin, interviewed William Pepper, who wrote the book An Active State, which talks about, you know, government involvement in that assassination. And it is a grim anniversary, but he lives on. Just today, it was really interesting. I was listening to, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity have been away as well over the past, well, at least starting today.
Not far enough away, but never mind. That's me being a smart aleck.
But thankfully, their substitute hosts were much more reasonable people, and they took calls from liberals. And a woman called in and was talking about Martin Luther King and said something like, you know, Martin Luther King said things similar to what Jeremiah Wright was saying. And the host was like, I think it was Mark Davis, I'm not sure, but he's like, no, that's not true. King talked about, you know, reconciliation and stuff. And this woman shared this quote where Martin Luther King said, a country born in genocide is going to tend to be destructive, or words, something like that.
I'm familiar with it. I've read that. So yeah, that's the gist.
Okay. And, you know, I know he also said something along the lines of, my country is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. That was his Beyond Vietnam speech.
But see, now that the right wing can't get away with openly demonizing him, they have to Santa Clausize him.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
No. He just loved little children. He loved little white children and little black children. He loved children. That's what Martin Luther King was about. Oh.
And they can boil it. They boil it down to don't judge a person by judge them by the content of their character instead of the color of their skin.
Yeah, and for that, and they use that as an excuse for making it harder for people with dark skin to get into places like the University of Michigan.
Exactly. Use that to tear down affirmative action, which harms not only communities of color, but, you know, the majority of the human population, the women who have been supported by those projects, who broke up these old boys' networks.
Right.
Especially in, you know, developers and things like that.
But legacies are okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's okay to let a moron like John McCain into Annapolis because his daddy and his granddaddy were, Annapolis grads.
Yeah. And why so limit the availability for anybody to attend universities, for example? I mean, there seems to be a halt on building universities while the prisons are going up all the time, and they've gotten budgeted out for the next 40 years. No problems. We're going to float these bonds, and we're going to have these financial institutions take care of it, and we'll have taxes, and on and on and on. But a new university? What?
Well, I mean, you know, if you're the head of Domino's Pizza and you want to put together a university, you know, the University of Our Lady of We Hate Gay People in Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's the private sector hard at work for America.
There you go.
You know, and I don't think they're having any problems with their building program at Bob Jones University. And, yep. and I mean, you want a barometer of how screwed up things are in America? Bob Jones University doesn't have any problem getting students. This is a place that preaches hatred for people of color. Moreover, for people of femaleness, people of gender. I mean, women. There we go. I knew I'd find a word sooner or later. People of color, women. They preach hatred for people of color who love people of non-color. Boy, I tell you what, it's tough working with the language sometimes, Preston. There's no. They hate the Catholics. They hate the atheists. They hate the Mormons. They hate they hate everybody that's not them. And they.
Of course, the Iraqis and.
Yeah, and the
Arabs.
And they're a private school, and they charge ungodly, unholy tuition, and there is always, always plenty of students to enter Bob Jones University.
And those young people are probably provided a lot of, you know, scholarship help.
Sure.
It gets kind of subsidized, I would imagine. So people are drawn to, you know, it can be a magnet, the finances. But I wanted to mention something, actually, about Van Jones and his interview. I just wanted to read a few sentences.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, he's talking about juvenile prisons and how many of those are being built. And he says, California, which is considered a liberal state, spends more money on prisons than any other state in the country, not because it is bigger, but because it has the wrong strategy. The governor wants to expand the size of the prison system by 50,000 beds, and we need to be moving in the opposite direction. In California, the juvenile prisons are like expensive prep schools for adult prisons. We are beating and brutalizing these kids, and 90% of them end up as repeat offenders. In the so-called red state of Missouri, on the other hand, they are taking juvenile offenders out of huge prisons and placing them in small dorm-like facilities. The doors have locks, but rather than the kids putting on orange uniforms and having adults in blue uniforms scream at them all day, everyone dresses normally. They have coaching, counseling, art instruction, yoga, and gardening. 70% of those kids never get in trouble again because they are being treated like human beings, not savage creatures. The Missouri program costs $30,000 a year per kid as opposed to the $120,000 a year we were spending here in California.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
you know, you catch more flies with sugar than you do vinegar. I mean, it's true.
Yep.
And if you consider who the kids are that wind up in those programs, every now and then you'll find it. Do you think any uber rich kid is going to wind up there? Of course not.
Unless their parents have been sold on this sort of...
Tough love.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. Right. so most of the kids who wind up there are kids who were born behind the eight ball anyway.
Yeah, but you're right. Typically, it isn't the uber rich, but you're right. Lots of impoverished people. A lot of impoverished kids are being forced to take Ritalin. There's a real effort to push that stuff in the schools. In fact, they connect it to, like...
Yeah, and you know what? If they like Ritalin, they're going to love Coke.
Right.
And
right.
Meth is just going to be a whole new world for them.
Right. And parents get threatened with losing their aid to families with dependent children money.
That is so it's so convenient that you would mention that, because you know Ritalin. You want to talk about a great gateway drug? Ritalin.
Yep.
Because really, once you've done Ritalin, Coke and meth are comprehensible. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Well, let's take a trip to Georgia, Preston.
Yep.
Where the Georgia legislature has gotten itself all up in a right-wing snit over something called chronic candy.
Chronic candy?
Yes, chronic candy.
Okay.
And it's now a law in Georgia that you may no longer sell chronic candy to minors. It is supposedly pot-flavored candy, which I can't fathom. I mean, that's why you hide it in a brownie, because it don't taste real good. The bill, which passed the Georgia Senate 42-3 and was introduced by, and the guy says, seriously, not an April Fool's joke. Oh, I'm sorry, I said right-wing. Well, it can still be right-wing, even though the guy's a Democrat. The person who introduced the resolution was a guy named Doug Stoner. And it says that this candy, what's their motto? I'm trying to read it here. Hold on.
And this was a resolution to...
It's illegal to sell this candy to minors now.
Okay.
Their motto is, every lick is like taking a hit.
Okay.
And it was banned because it's a gateway drug.
Hmm.
It's not even a drug. It's a gateway candy.
And, well, it's different things to different people, I think. Interestingly, there's a documentary called The American Drug War playing on Showtime right now. And Showtime usually, a lot of their programming I don't like at all. I think HBO tends to be a little better, and HBO tends to have some really good documentaries. But this one was on Showtime, and they had a section where they talked about chronic candy. They use that term, but it's medical marijuana that they prepare for people who can't smoke it, and they make, you know, brownies and stuff like that. But there's also candies and things.
Yeah, but this there's no psychoactive stuff to this candy.
Okay. Oh, it just tastes like pot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, the guy who writes this says, I'm glad to see that the government's cracking down on gateway candy now. Pretty soon they'll ban dreadlocks and acoustic guitars and require showers of all its citizens.
Right, right.
And then we'll be able to really make progress.
Then they'll take Bob Marley off the air. And
Well, you know, I remember way back when Hickory Farms of Ohio, you familiar with that, you know, cheese and meats and sausages and all that stuff? They had standalone stores in malls. Now they only pop up at Christmas. But they had standalone stores in malls with, you know, oodles and oodles of wonderful cheeses and stuff. And bizarre stuff. I'll never forget my first, as a kid, my first box of dried banana chips.
Okay.
I was just dumbstruck by it. It's a banana but without the peeling.
Yeah.
They had a bin that sold candies that tasted like cocktails. You know, there was Mai Tai and Margarita and Thackeray and Pina Colada. And I remember the pastor in my church railing against this stuff. I'd never heard of it before.
That's interesting. Do you remember that candy where it was like a pack of cigarettes?
Oh, candy cigarettes? Absolutely.
Okay. And you could blow the sugar out, make it look
it looked like smoke. And I remember bubblegum cigars, too.
Yeah.
They probably both account for my cigarette and cigar habits now, because they were gateway candies. No, I really don't think so. But the funny thing is, I'm sitting in church and hearing my minister have an absolute purple polka dotted blue scream and hissy with kittens with crocheted tails about candy, no alcohol in it, just flavoring. You know, daiquiri tastes like a lime, but it's sexier and more adults buy it if you come, oh, it's daiquiri candy. Oh, well, okay, Marge, I'm going to buy some. I'd never heard of it, but by God, next time I was in Hickory Farm, hey, where's the booze candy? And, you know, wow, that's pina colada, huh? Yeah, funny, it tastes like pineapple and coconut to me, because this big, sweating, red-faced doofus had a hissy about it in church. It drives kids to it. Oh, I can't get this candy now. Boy, hey, guys, I got some of the really awful-tasting chronic candy, but it's illegal. Oh, give me some.
Yeah. I wonder if that was probably created by some marketing firm, I would imagine. Who knows? Possibility. They're certainly selling the cigarettes hard in third world countries. I mean, here where they've run up against some regulations, they've been pushing Marlboros by, you know, hey, kids, if you can come back with three proofs of purchases, we'll let you into the soccer game for free, or
right,
that kind of thing. And lots of shirts and things for the children with, rags on their backs. Here's a shirt with the Marlboro advertising.
Hey, you can't afford food, but, you know, maybe you can go out and steal to get some cigarettes, because you need a good addiction going.
You know, and if China applied our logic, our drug war logic, our Vietnam, they would have the rationale to come here and start spraying herbicides on North Carolina.
God, that's so true.
You know, we fumigate Colombia and Bolivia, and
no. Speaking of Colombia, did you see that Mark Penn is down there working hard to put together a deal with the fascist dictatorship there?
I'm glad you brought that up. I just heard about that this morning. David Sirota was on the local station talking about that. Is his article the one you're thinking of, or
yeah?
Okay, and yeah, that's a shame, and that relationship needs to be questioned. And but I also wonder when I hear that stuff. I don't know. It makes me think of something Jimmy Carter said. Like the first year into office, he said he was amazed by how little power he had. And sometimes I wonder, how much power does Hillary Clinton have over, say, what a Mark Penn is doing? I don't know. She's certainly spoken.
Well, I noticed that even Carolyn Kay said in her digest that that Hillary needs to get shed of Mark Penn.
That would be great, I think. Although Hillary herself has been very negative towards South America in her rhetoric.
Yes, she has.
What she's being told to say.
And Obama hasn't been much better.
No. You know, I think Nader is one of the few, and that's why I still appreciate he puts it out there, even though, you know, there can be some negative ramifications, but largely I think it's a positive thing. Yeah, I've been reading about the Socialist Party in this country and its history and how they were always losing elections, and Frederick Douglass had this Equality Party where he ran on a third party ticket as vice president, and they only got a couple percentage points, but still they had an effect on the dialogue, which is so key, so absolutely key. You know, what are we talking about? What issues are being put before us? How can we respond? You know, that's so often missing from the discussion. It's like, what's being done to us, and how awful it.
Does it have to be done? Do you think? I mean, does it have to be done, Preston, from the podium of a failed before it gets out of the blocks third party attempt? I mean,
I don't know. I don't know, but I do think it's been a contributor. Time and time again.
Oh, Eugene Debs' candidacies had a real impact.
Yeah.
Because it put the ideas out there that put them in the public consciousness that allowed FDR to try to put some of it into play. I had an email from our good buddy Tosh earlier today talking about the Republicans, and he was casting back to a conversation in a previous show, something I had said about the Republican Party at the time of FDR and who ran against FDR. And it was Alf Landon and Wendell Willkie. But anyway, he pointed out the fact that at the time that FDR was in the White House, the Republicans didn't even have enough members of the Senate to muster a filibuster. And I reflected on that, Preston, and I the first thing that came to mind was what I've noted on a number of occasions. The Republican Party, not a single member of the Republican Party in the House or the Senate voted in favor of the legislation that created Social Security. Not one. But what I realized when I saw what Tosh had said is that by virtue of the fact that the Republicans were so thoroughly out of power in FDR's administration, it is only because they couldn't muster a filibuster that we got Social Security, because otherwise they could have stopped it dead in its tracks.
Yeah.
And that's what that points the way. I mean, if you want the Employees Free Choice Act, if you want an expansion of CHIPS, if you want universal health care, if you want an end of the war, you have to absolutely silence the Republicans. And I'm not trying to trample on anybody's freedom of speech or anything like that, but if you want to make progress, if you want to take care of the whole country, the Republican Party has to be so weak that they cannot do any harm. You have to pull the fangs out of the viper.
Yeah, and we definitely need to speak with those Republicans who've had a change of heart in some ways. I think Lincoln Chafee, the Rhode Island senator.
Right.
Limbaugh is constantly criticizing him for being too moderate or something. But he ended up leaving the Republican Party. He was very much against the Iraq invasion, and he's an independent now. And a couple months ago, he actually endorsed Barack Obama.
But see, this independent business, he needs to be part of the solution.
Yep.
And you know, okay, Bernie Sanders is an independent. Okay, I get that. But so is Joe Lieberman.
True.
We need, see, as an independent, no matter how good your intentions, we need people with progressive ideas inside the party. That's what I keep getting at. We rail about these blue dog Democrats, these Democrats that you wouldn't trust with a handful of caca, because, you know, they'd try to get a government contract out of it or something. We rail against these people, and yet at the same time, we don't, and people think, well, you know, I'll be an independent. Well, you know, I'm going to leave the party. Blah, 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 blah. That's not the answer. The answer is to change the party. Because you and I don't have time to build a third party. If there's ever a third party president, it'll be 100 years from now.
Yep.
And the harm that will have been done to this nation by the Republicans by then, it can't be fully calculated.
Yep. Change the party and...
I mean, that's why we wound up with all these so-called conservative Democrats, is because they changed the party.
Yeah. And change our professions if we can, or change the dialogues in our classrooms if we're students or teachers. Beyond the Democrats and the Republicans, there's this kind of revolutionary change going on. You know, some of it's regressive change, but a lot of progressive change going on very much outside the party, you know.
And I'd like to talk to those people. I'd like to try to at least make my pitch.
You have been, definitely. Well, you know what people are doing in the Gulf, you know, the work that they're doing, or your friend BJ, who's creating her own media.
Yeah.
And those DVDs land in the hands of people who, you know.
Because, I mean, I'm as disgusted as anybody with, for instance, the conduct of my party in this state, because it doesn't represent any kind of progressive ideals. It was kind of cute to see a bunch of chickens come home to roost, you know, I talked a few days ago about the fact that we used to have a completely functional workers' compensation system here until the Republicans broke it. And then we get the governor we've got now who came into office and said, well, you know, workers' compensation's broken. The only way to fix it's to privatize it.
Yep.
And everybody said, well, okay, if you say so, well, we're going to privatize workers. So you get this big old boondoggle brand spanking new corporation that's spending money like a drunken sailor on fancy buildings, and it turns out, and the governor is pissed, Preston. Oh, he is pissed. It came time for them to have their corporate meeting.
Yeah.
Guess where they went?
I don't know.
They are a company that's not allowed to sell workers' compensation insurance anywhere but the state of West Virginia, and they set their corporate meeting up at a resort in Lexington, Kentucky.
Okay.
And Governor Joe here is right hot under the collar about that. But, you know, you want to look at him and go, what do you expect?
Yeah. Do you ever watch the Bill Moyer Show Journal? Bill Moyer's
Journal? Yeah, when I can, and I usually catch it at, you know, in a recorded format.
Yeah. You know, I've been missing it a lot recently, but I just kind of happened upon it last week. And have you heard of this mayor in Newark, New Jersey named Cory Booker?
Mm-mm.
Well, I think he's a friend of Obama's, actually, and very much like him in a lot of ways. He was a community organizer and doing just fantastic stuff, and also has dealt with a lot of issues of environmental injustice and pushing that green agenda. And you know, those are the people who are transcending the Democrat and Republican division. You know, politics in so many ways isn't as divisive as the impressions we're getting fed all the time. You know, it's interesting right now. I hope Limbaugh and Sean Hannity kind of do stay away for a while, because their fill-in hosts are much more fair. You know, they're taking calls from liberals. Mark Davis, he's based in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I disagree with him on a lot of things, but I've been calling into his show. I used to call into his show, and we talk about green energy all the time. And that was really, it's really been revelatory for me to understand that there are some Republican radio hosts who really do value the traditional, the better parts of the American experiment.
You know, it's interesting. It was that Mark Davis you were talking that you're talking about, who was part and parcel of the big. Do you remember the big hissy that went around a couple of weeks ago? Oh my God, Bill Clinton was on Rush Limbaugh. You remember that?
You know, I heard part of that. I didn't know. Was that true? I missed that. I mean,
it is such a dummy up job.
Okay.
There was a Bill Clinton interview that was passed around that was pre-recorded, which Mark Davis, under the guise of filling in for Rush Limbaugh, took and inserted his own questions into to make it sound like he was talking directly to Bill Clinton.
Okay.
And then played it and held it out to the public as such.
Okay.
And, of course, the people who are vociferously anti-Clinton, just, you know, their hair caught fire. And they started screaming, Jesus Christ, he's sitting down with Rush Limbaugh now. What is that evil man going to do next? There's nothing of the sort. I mean, it's like the business of Hillary giving Richard Mellon Scaife.
Yep.
Richard Mellon Scaife is the publisher of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review.
Yeah.
Now, regardless of what you think of that newspaper, I personally think that I would not insult the guts of a dead mackerel by wrapping them in it. It's got the influence of a major newspaper because it is one.
Yep, it's a forum.
And when you sit down with the editorial board, just like Barack Obama sat down with the editorial board of that right-wing rag in Nevada, and said that Ronald Reagan was the neatest thing since sliced bread, Hillary sat down with the editorial board of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, and, you know, the editorial board of any given newspaper includes its publisher.
Yeah.
But instead of having the story put out there, Hillary Clinton sits down with editorial board of Pittsburgh Tribune Review, it was, Jesus Christ, she's sitting down with the Antichrist. How that woman could ever sit down with a filthy piece of crap like Richard Mellenscaith. And you know what? If she had if she had gone dancing with Richard Mellenscaith, I'd say that. If she had decided to, you know, go to the local Chinese buffet for lunch with Richard Mellenscaith, I'd say that. But she was sitting down for an interview with an editorial board of a newspaper in a state that she is trying to win. Now, do I support Hillary Clinton? No. But I do, however, support a sane and accurate and factual approach to, you know, facts.
Yeah. And don't play these guilt by association games.
Because there's plenty of that to go around, Preston, the guilt by association. There's plenty of that.
Sure. And, you know, notice how little were told about what she actually said when she did sit down. It was, well, she just sat down. If we're told anything, it'll be a little snippet that everyone, you know, frames in the most negative way possible. But who knows? I mean, I saw her speaking at a Lockheed Martin plant in Cincinnati. And I thought for sure, okay, this is going to be the Hillary tied to establishment person that I don't like. And a lot of it was very establishment friendly. But towards the end of it, she starts talking about to the scientists and the engineers about how they could change their focus on weaponry to green technologies. And, you know, at the end, she got a standing ovation. And I thought it was well deserved. I mean, Eisenhower talked about how what a waste of our scientific skills it is. This focus on the military complex.
Yeah, and he also called. He didn't call. You know, we refer to it as the military industrial complex. That ain't what he called it, Preston.
The military industrial
congressional complex.
Yep.
And that story in Caro's Digest from earlier today. Fully 25% of the members of Congress have substantial positions in their portfolios in industries that do business with the Department of Defense. It is therefore in their best interests, in other words, self-dealing, for them to perpetuate the occupation of Iraq.
Yeah.
And that's Democrats and Republicans. Because I'm sure in that 25%, I know of at least one Democrat, Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah. Is it her husband? Isn't he a big...
Yeah, huge defense contractor.
Lobbyist. Okay. Definitely. And I'm not even judging how sincere Hillary Clinton is being during those speeches, but I was thinking, you know, it would just be more useful to sometimes at least take a snippet of what she's saying like that and throw that out, you know, to the 200,000 people that listen to Randy's show, or many hundreds of thousands of people. Let's discuss this. Should we hold her accountable to this vision? Yes. But we have to hear it to even start discussing it, to, you know, before or against the idea.
Right. You know, with us still having a primary coming, we're getting a visit from Chelsea Clinton. And unlike the Rush Limbaughs of the world, I'm not going to say anything. She seems like a very smart, successful young woman. Good on her. But, you know, tomorrow, Preston, tomorrow morning, we are going to, me and my little family here and a lot of other people, we're going to go up on that same spot on the mountain for the Blessing of the Mountains Part 2, where they're destroying our homes with the mountaintop removal job. You know what? I would love for Chelsea Clinton to be at something like that.
That would be great.
Because you know what? Her mama probably listens to her baby and have her go home and say, Mama, we can't have this anymore.
Yeah. Do you have any ideas how you might be able to approach her with that? Or
I've got one distant contact, but, you know, it's probably a long shot. She may even already be gone. She was, I know that she was in West Virginia today at the convention of the Young Democrats.
I remember Amy Carter used to do some radical activism regarding Central America when her dad was in office.
Yeah, and good for her. Hey, Preston, I got to roll along. I got a bunch of blinking lights here, but wonderful
Sounds
conversation
good.
As always.
Likewise.
All right.
Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.
Let's keep it rolling. We're not even going to run the hour 3 intro or anything like that. Let's just keep rolling along. Hi, welcome to the program. Okay. Well, all those blinking lights turned out to be not blinking lights. So that means I ran Preston off prematurely. Darn it. You'll have that sometimes. So we will take a little interlude, and we'll come back, and we will run the hour two, hour three intro. And there are some stories that I keep aiming to hit and missing. Maybe we'll get at them. This is America's liberal voice. This is the horn. We'll be right back.
The best things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. Such a thrill. But your love won't pay my bills. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I want. Don't get everything, it's true. What it don't get, I can't use. I want money.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, here we go. And the phones started ringing as soon as I said that all the blinkers were gone. And got a couple blinking now. Let's go back to the phone. Hi, welcome to the program. Hello?
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 Yes.
Is this Head On Radio?
It is.
It's Gary.
Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? You having problems with the phones?
No, not that I know of.
Oh, okay. All right, so what's going on?
Just trying to get past the stuff that has diverted my attention for the last couple of days that I feel really stupid and ashamed about.
What's that?
Well, you know, the Randy Rhodes thing.
Oh, Randy Rhodes.
Yeah. But, you know, there's plenty of other stuff out there that'll just, you know, make you scream and run around the room.
Yeah. She shouldn't have said that.
That's the thing. Now, if I'm going to sit here and say that the right-wingers are a bunch of overwrought goons when they have hissies about language, I gotta at least be consistent. And that's kind of where I caught myself last night. But honest to God, I think we got plenty of division in the party right now, Gary.
Bob, I told you that was going to happen. You disagree with me at the time, but I said this was going to happen.
had to calm down because I'm really kind of getting upset with a lot of the people on some other side of this so-called divide in our party. Because I'm starting to realize people aren't just using common sense anymore. They're starting to become too emotionally invested. And somebody like Randy, who's, you know, I respect, and I think he's very smart, to go off in that tangent really just shows you how irrational people are becoming about this thing. I mean, it's just really crazy. You know, I mean, the goal is to beat Republican people, to beat John McCain.
That seems really easy to me. I mean, that just seems like a really easy concept for me to get my mind around, Gary, and it looks like you're not having much trouble with it either. Beat John McCain.
We're all guilty of it, Bob. You're guilty of it too, to some degree. Now, let's do the show.
I know.
Because...
I keep trying to draw the focus back. Even when I catch myself getting played for a chump, I keep trying to draw the focus back.
You know, you ever heard of, you know what a group Public Enemy is?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Remember they had one of their famous albums called Fear of a Black Planet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You think that...
Fear of a Black President. I mean, let me just break this down to be clear. I'm going to tell you this because I'm an African-American. Because I hear it in some of the calls who called, not this show, but... other shows. And I say to them this. We can't be overly concerned with what the racist people in this country are going to do. We have to just make the right choice that we want to make. We can't be, like, concerned about someone's safety. Because then that goes into the whole thing when I'm talking about fear of a black president.
If we, Gary, if we're voting based on somebody's skin color or genitalia... I think it's an open question as to whether or not anybody who would do that deserves the right to vote.
Yeah, but see, I think there are people in the Democratic Party who are white, who, when it comes right down to it, they can make all excuses and things they say. I mean, I understand the people who really are for Hillary and everything, and I understand their position because, you know, she's a fine candidate, and if you look at it a certain way, just like Barack is if you look at it a certain way. But I also, as African-American, most African-Americans, very sensitive to a lot of things. One thing we're very sensitive to is to white people who pretend that they are really, as they say, down with black people.
Mm-hmm.
They're really down, they're prejudiced. And they'll come in with these little cold words about, you know, say certain things, well, somebody's doing this and this and this and that. But, and make some excuse why they're not going to vote for Barack, saying, oh, you know, if Hillary's not the candidate, I'm not going to vote for her or whatever. And I just keep saying to those people, then tell me clearly what it is Barack Obama has done. Don't tell me about the media being unfair to her, because that has nothing to do with Barack Obama. Don't tell me about some stuff. Need it seriously, people. Need to ask yourself, yeah. Am I a closet racist?
Yeah, and that's why I tried to point out, you know, yes, the media are being unfair to Hillary Clinton, and they are performing true to form for everything that they've done since 1992.
Wow, we knew that before.
Exactly.
Man, we knew this was going to happen. We know that they hate the Clinton. I have no. When I hear people say, "Oh, they've been," I saw from day one that MSC, Chris Matthews, Tucker Carlson, people hate the Clinton. They hate them.
Well, you should. You know,
it's not because of gender. Don't get it. People say they just hate them. Period. Now you could throw it in a gender, but they really just hate the Clinton overall. Now maybe it's the gender or whatever, but they hate their political point of view because their point of view contradicts what their whole point of view is, which is the destruction of America.
I wish
they don't know Barack Obama that much.
No,
they don't really know where he stands too much. I mean, they're starting to get to know him, but you understand where I'm coming
and,
from.
Yes, I do, Gary, and it is worthwhile to mention that what they the way the media have treated Hillary Clinton, they will transfer to Barack Obama if he's the nominee.
No doubt.
And I don't think any of us are babes in the woods who think otherwise.
No, I don't think anything different. Particularly that he's a black man, I know he's going to catch hell. You know, that's why we always joke that Clinton was the first black president. So we're well prepared for the onslaught that's coming.
Yeah, and the thing is, push back. There's got to be a pushback on it.
There will be a pushback. There's been a pushback now. The whole Reverend Wright thing. People like hyperventilate. It's not going to stick.
Well, you know, I started an unofficial horn pool last night in the horn section, Gary. And my question is, and I've got Monday. Okay, I've got Monday. How long before someone demands that Barack Obama renounce Randy Rhodes?
I don't know.
But you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Because you know, all of a sudden he's he's got to denounce, and then the candidate's got to denounce, and good God. At what point in time do we realize that even political candidates do not control every single word that comes out of every single human's mouth? You would think that we were in some sort of Soviet state where, you know, there was complete control of every thought. And that just drives me nuts. I ran the sound clip, two nights ago of Chris Matthews talking about Barack Obama's a great basketball player, and we know why. Holy crap! I mean,
the basketball player, you know, that's one of the things he does a lot, but, you know, whatever.
You know, and it was all over the bowling.
Man, what'd you expect? I mean,
but it was all over the bowling thing, and they didn't even have the perspicacity to recognize that the reason Barack Obama was bowling is not because he was trying to, you know, get out there and rub shoulders with lower middle class whites. He was at a bowling alley because he's gotten the support of Jerome Bettis, who is one of the best amateur bowlers in the country.
To give him some lessons.
Yeah, well, you know, that might not have been a bad idea. But, you know,
I actually like the fact that he didn't perform as well. I think it kind of, you know, whatever. I guess you have to look at things every kind of way.
I still think a guy who starts out bowling left-handed is like a golfer who golfs left-handed. You've got two strokes against you starting out. Because you'd think it's not, but it's a very right-handed thing.
I'm not really a bowler, so I can't. Really.
I bowled when I was a kid. I'm a terrible bowler.
I actually bowled. I was pretty good at it.
But you know what? I don't think, when he's president, that there are going to be any world issues resolved, say with Vladimir Putin, perhaps, or his handpicked man Medvedev. I don't think they're going to resolve it with a game of ten pins. You know, this isn't upstate New York, and it's not what's his name, Rip Van Winkle, and or any of that. No, it's so juvenile, Gary. But you know, you're right. You are right. There's no getting around the inherent racism of this country. We were born in it. This is the anniversary. This is the 40th anniversary of the most blatant proof of it that we have in the last 50 years.
Well, I have some pretty comforting words on this, because you know where I stand on this. You know, you talked about the poll earlier, because, you know, I've been in the arguments with people in my family say, oh, you know, white people would never vote for a black man. I mean, I'm talking about arguments, really. They would just hang up the phone and say, you're crazy, you know. And, you know, because I was Trey Edwards and really consented beforehand, so I was not really interested in Obama, because I thought he was very conservative. I didn't realize he was as liberal as at least his vote record is. On some things, he's very conservative in terms of his Christian point of view. That kind of makes him a little more conservative on some things. But that being said, I've had strong arguments with some people in my family. Now they're finally coming around saying, no, well, maybe it could happen this time. And some of them are starting to say, yes, it could happen. But I've said all along, and I'm still going to say until somebody proves me otherwise, or something proves me otherwise, is that this election is going to be about one thing. And we saw that poll that came out. I don't think did you see it? The one about the 80% said we're going in the wrong direction.
81%.
Yeah. Now there's only one word that is the antiquated answer to that. We all know what that word is. It's change. That's what this election is going to be about. This is the only reason why probably a black man can get elected. It's probably the only time he could get elected. This election is going to be about changing Washington. That's what. These people hyperventilating over John McCain. John McCain, Bob. I'm just saying from a media standpoint, he is a weak candidate. Think about it right now. Him and Hillary and Barack Obama, whether it's Hillary or Barack Obama, whoever the president is, they're going to win. The Democrats are going to win. I'm not even worried about the right-wing machine. It didn't help them in 2006. It's over for them, and they know it. This is like the last throws for them or something. John McCain is a weak candidate, and he's just being, you know, getting glossed over right now. His time is coming, too. will be vetted. When it happens, it won't be pretty. I personally believe we're going to win in a landslide. I mean, I could be wrong on that, but I think we're going
to... I mean, that's not to the extent that any poll is worth paying attention to.
I don't pay attention to polls.
I mean, that's not what the numbers indicate right now. You know, it's neck and neck. It's a horse race. Well, you know what? You can do me a favor, Gary.
Yeah.
Tell your family that there is one incredibly pink human being up a holler in West Virginia who will run, not walk, to the polls to vote for Barack Obama for president in November.
I told him about Iowa. I told him about Wisconsin. That's when they finally realized that, you know, hey, you know what? Maybe every white person in this country ain't racist. You know, I've been trying to tell people for a long time, you know, that's not to say we don't have racism. It's just institutionalized racism. But when it comes right down to a singular vote, I'm 100% confident that white Americans, even though they, of course, they have, I have to say, disappointed me with George Bush and whatever, this time they're going to do what is best for the country. It doesn't matter if it's a woman, black man, white man, whatever. They're going to pick the right candidate or the best candidate. I have 100%.
But I do maintain, Gary, it's going to be ugly. And if the nominee is Barack Obama, it's hard to evade the fact that on the McCain staff right now, as you and I speak, on the McCain staff is the guy who crafted the Harold Ford ads in Tennessee. Reckon why he's on staff.
Well, I can say this: Judgment Day. It's Judgment Day for white America. If you want this country to slide into the abyss, then go ahead and pay attention to your little racist fears and all this other kind of stuff. But if you want to be a rational, adult human being, and be adult, people, Democrats support your freaking candidate, okay?
And give him a Congress he can work with, for heaven's sakes.
Exactly. And a senator.
I'm a senator.
Give him the things that he will get. And we will get that. Because, and I'm going to, you know, say this right quick. McCain. Let's just start with McCain. One, Bush. That's his first hit against them. We haven't even started it. The Democrats haven't even started to link him to Bush, okay? Two, lobbyists. No one has gotten into his whole long history of lobbyists and his whole, you know, the Keating thing that have not been talked about. Third thing, money. He's not going to raise the amount of money that Barack Obama is going to raise. We know that. That makes a lot of difference. Four, Iraq. No matter what happens, Iraq is still going to be Iraq, okay? Five, the most pressing thing that people don't realize is going to sink him, his age.
Well, he even sort of ratted himself out the other day. Did you see that, Gary?
Yeah, when he had the moment.
Well, no, when he was talking about his vice presidential list that he's putting together. And he said he wants all of that out of the way before the convention. He said, and his advisors all kind of went, because he said, I want to solve the vice president thing in advance, and I've got to pick a really good vice president because I am sensitive of my advanced age, and I know America is too.
Well, again, you add that, Bush, lobbyist, he has no money to compete, age, and Iraq. You look at that, those are his negatives starting out. Those are five key negatives. We look at Barack Obama, or even if it was Hillary Clinton, but I would say probably more so Barack Obama because it looks like he's in the driver's seat right now, is the thing that they have right now on him is Reverend Wright. Now, all he has to come out and say that Reverend Wright didn't send our troops into Iraq. Okay, just stop making, I mean, at some point, reality has to sit in. So if that's all they got, Bob, they're going to come up Reverend Wright, or they're going to come up with some kind of like, oh, he was in a slave cavern and said, whatever the crap they're going to come up. It's not enough to overcome those five things I just listed. That's my whole point. They need to have that little margin of error like Bush had against Kerry. They're not going to have that now. And, you know, I could be wrong on this, but so far I haven't been wrong on this. Starting out, I felt strongly that he's going to go ahead and win the nomination. I think that he's going to win the presidency. I think the Democrats are going to win. I think the reason why Hillary and them are so probably crazed out right now, they know that if she gets the nomination, she's going to win. I mean, that's just how I see it. Even Bill Clinton said the Democrats are going to win. He told us all to chill out. I think for once we ought to listen to Bill. You know, just chill out, people. Stop calling each other names and saying I'm not going to vote for the candidate. Just let them play it out, and whoever wins, wins. Isn't that what we should be doing?
Yes. Yes. And that's why, I mean, that's why I'm sitting here with a big old stack of what's wrong with John McCain stories. And that's why I said I feel like a chump for wasting the last two nights getting suckered in on that debate.
You should start off talking about him and Bush, him and lobbyists, the fact that he can't raise any money.
Look, you know, he gave his signal speech on home mortgages, Gary, and it didn't turn out to be much of a, you know, he was going to give us some straight talk about the mortgage crisis. Well, guess who two of his advisors are? It's a pair of cats by the name of John Green and Wayne Berman. From 2005 to last year, they billed more than $720,000 for AmeriQuest Mortgage. Guess what AmeriQuest Mortgage did, Gary?
What did they do?
Subprimes.
I think I read that in the Wall Street Journal. I saw a blurb on it. I didn't read the whole story, but
yeah,
surprised. He's tied all in with lobbyists. I mean, you can go through and dissect his whole career, I'm pretty sure. Did you read that thing in the New York Times when it came out, that story about him tied to that lobbyist?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was just really a plan to get people to start to explore his ties to these lobbyists. You know, so that's why I kind of looked at that story. You know, we'll see what happens, but right now the media is just giving them a pass, you know. It's like it's really...
Yeah, they are, and we're going to have to demand that be broken. Gary, I got to roll along, but thanks for a little bit of sanity, man. And just you know, reinforce it with the family, please. There's at least
everybody chill out.
Yeah, take a deep breath. Going to be all right. All right, thanks, Gary. Bye now. Our buddy Gary calling from Maryland, and you know, chill out's pretty daggum good advice. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Andy.
Yeah, how's it going?
Going good. How about you?
Yeah, all right, man. I'm going to have to stop messing around in the chat room or I'm not going to be able to cope.
Oh, okay.
Right, yeah, I'm going to stop looking at it now. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to click the wee minimizey bit. There we go. How's things, man?
You know, I work hard on trying to stay on the straight and narrow here, and when I catch myself getting used, I feel like I don't like it when I feel like an idiot, Andy.
Yeah, fair play. Nobody does.
Kind of personally embarrassing.
Well, chalk it up to experience, man, and move on.
That's kind of what I got to do, and that's what I'm desperately trying to do.
Well, what do you want to talk about? Ooh, we could talk about all sorts of things. Political corruption, corporate corruption.
There's a difference?
Go on.
There's a difference?
Well, yeah, it's possible for corporations to be corrupt without involving politicians and vice versa. Just generally they happen together, you know.
Well, it's that little 25% number that I saw on the Digest today. And you know it all along, but when it gets put up right in front of your face where you can't help but focus on it and you just go, oh, damn it.
Yeah. You know, I've been saying this for a while, really, haven't I? That they're all kind of tied in together, these ruling class fiends, and these people that are in charge of your Congress and your Senate are all, well, pretty much tools of them, you know? And it's not at all surprising. In fact, what is surprising that it's so low?
And it may not be.
It probably isn't. It's just the others have hidden it better.
Yeah, that's the ones they found.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
why are people in Congress allowed to make money in any company? I mean, think about it. You know, if you've got shares in Walmart, then you're going to bring in legislation that will increase the share price of Walmart. Same thing for GM, same thing for General Electric, same thing for Megadeth Corporation USA. Whatever corporation it is, that corporation isn't relevant. It's you having the shares in it, you know. So this brings us on to political cleanliness or the lack thereof, doesn't it? I mean, why can your politicians own shares? Why is it when they start running for Congress or Senate or whatever office, they aren't forced to instantly sell all the shares and put the money in the bank?
You know, I don't have a valid answer for that, Andy.
That's because there isn't a valid answer for it. Only if you want corruption do you allow politicians to own shares.
I don't want them living on beans or anything. But the last I checked, you can do
on beans. They get very well paid.
You can do pretty good on $160,000 a year, even in D.C.
Yeah, and they don't have to pay for any of their own transport, and they don't pay for much food because they get fed everywhere.
They don't even pay for their own stamps.
No, I mean, dude, Gordon Brown over here. You know what a TV license is? I mean, I'm not sure if all the people listening.
Yeah, you pay an individual license to, right? I mean, I've got that right.
We pay, every household has a license to pay if you have a TV capable of receiving pictures. Now, it's less for a black and white telly. I think there are about 150 people in Britain who use
right.
black and white telly.
Who live in caves by the sea, right.
Yeah, basically. But it's like 140 odd quid a year. And that pays for the BBC. And it also pays for some of the Welsh language stuff and some of the Scottish language stuff. But mostly it pays for the BBC. So all that stuff you guys get for free, effectively, when you get BBC World or whatever, you know, buy your cable package, you have to pay your cable provider, but none of that money goes back to the BBC. That's all provided courtesy of me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, no need to all thank me at once. I do take checks. But Gordon Brown doesn't even pay his own TV license.
Government covers it.
Neither do most of the MPs. On their expenses. On their expenses, they get paid £160,000 a year or something like that.
Oh, that's nice. That's even better than a member of the House or Senate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Our politicians are paid much better than yours, and that's why we have less corruption than yours. But we still have plenty of corruption.
So do you think if we doubled the pay in Congress that we could then pass a law that runs alongside of it that says, you know, no more nothing else on the side?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it'd be very easy to pass laws if you can get the ground root movement in place to push these people for it. Just saying that, you know, you've got to divest yourself of all investment. Money has to go into a bank. It all has to be accounted for. If any investment is found to be in your name or in any other, you know, family member's name, or is being held for you by another party, and that's proven, you should instantly go to jail.
See, that's what the blind trust is supposed to do.
Well, no, it's not. A blind trust is you're not supposed to know what your money's doing, which, of course, is just nonsense, because your stockbroker is effectively, what you do is you hand over control to a stockbroker, and the stockbroker buys and sells shares on the basis of what they think is best for you. And so, effectively, you don't know what's in your portfolio.
Right. That's what I mean. You're not
But you can be in charge of that in the sense that you can sit down with your stockbroker's brother and say, oh, I know that there's going to be a lot of movement on the weapons market soon. Nudge, nudge. Do you know
sure would what like I to mean? Have me some Carlyle Group shares.
Yeah, exactly, you know. And nudge, nudge, wink, wink is how this all works. So you just have to have very clear, very simple, unambiguous, simple English laws saying no shareholding, no stockholding, no dividends to be paid. You are allowed nothing except the money you have already earned that you put in the bank and what you get paid as part of the government. And that happens, like, at the beginning of the the political campaign part. And, of course, I think you should have publicly funded campaigns, because it's amazing how short the campaigns are when the tax man's got his hand on the bill. 4 weeks over here. We get an election done in 4 weeks.
Oh, but what would you're pulling back the curtain on one of the primary problems with our election process, Andy. And yeah, the candidates are part of it, but if you sit them down quietly and give them a couple of shots of hooch, they'll tell you that they really hate doing all the hand kissing and baby shaking.
Well, who wouldn't, man? I mean, you know, you're dragging your carcass around all over the bloody country, trying to get money out of people.
Right. And that, like I said, you know, you get them alone and actually telling the truth, they'll tell you that they would just as soon not have to do that. But the one person that, no matter, you can get a funnel and waterboard them with 110 proof bourbon, and the media moguls will sit there and tell you, we like this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's great for them. I mean, you know, look at the comparison over here on the media. Every media station at the same time during the election period has to play say 6 o'clock, it'll be the Labour Party message, okay? And the Labour Party puts it together, and there's a limit on how much they're allowed to spend, and they have a little, you know, I approve this message sort of nonsense, yeah? which of course is very heavily regulated by our watchdogs of TV to make sure they're not allowed to lie, they're not allowed to twist the truth, they pretty much can't say bad things, they can only attack on the issues.
Now see, Andy, you're telling the whole wide world how it is that you in the UK you don't have freedom of speech.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta tell the truth.
Yeah, you've got to tell the truth. And the best thing is that at 6 o'clock you'll have the Labour message, and at 7 o'clock you'll have the Conservative message, and at 8 o'clock you'll have the Lib Dem message, and at 9 o'clock you'll have the Welsh Nationalist message, and at 10 o'clock you'll have the Scottish Party message, or they'll space them out on different days.
And then they rotate them from day to day so that everybody gets in the top slot.
And you know, when you're on BBC One, you get the message. You go, oh no, I don't want to watch politics. BBC Two, the message. ITV, the message. Channel 4. The message, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like everyone gets the same amount of time, everyone gets it rammed down the population's throats equally, yeah? And that's the sum.
Now, but how does it work with individual member candidacies?
You don't vote. Your system's a bit different. Your individual member runs for the party. So when you vote for an MP, you'll know his name because they'll have put flyers out, but they're not allowed to have TV or radio ads. They have to be party ads. So, you know, you'll have whatever his name, Jones, for the Labour Party, and, you know, we've got Jenny Willett is the Lib Dems around here, and who knows what the Conservative is. There's no blue in Wales.
I noticed that you said who knows what the Conservative is as opposed to who.
Yeah.
Serpent.
What's more apt when you're talking about these people? I mean, remember, we've got the Conservative Party where the dude was found strapped down on all fours over a table, one arm and one leg to each leg of the table, with a rather large device inserted in a certain cavity.
Oh man, I've got a dead minister in Montgomery he'd like to meet.
Dude,
what a shame,
dude, wearing a gimp outfit with a plastic bag over his head and one of those ball gags in his mouth.
Well, no, that's surprisingly like the Southern Baptist minister in Montgomery. He died that way. He had on two wetsuits. With all the devices that you just described, as well, and he was also hogtied, and he smothered himself.
Yeah, these people are nuts, man.
And his wife came in and said he's been murdered.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they were trying to say it was some weird like left wing plot that got this dude in the first place, but then finally they admitted it. He was just a freak.
We even wrote a song about it. I can't believe you haven't heard that. I'll have to email it to you.
Who did it all?
Oh, I wrote the lyrics and John Fox did the music.
Oh, I heard the song, right?
Yeah, the pastor from Montgomery.
Right, I wasn't exactly sure whether it was they banned sex toys and you were taking the piss back.
Well, yeah, they did. The sex toys are illegal in Alabama.
Oh, right, okay.
And so as a consequence of that, you know, if only he'd had freedom, he might not have wound up that way.
Well, yeah.
Or maybe if he hadn't been raised in a completely repressive, fundamentalist, puritanical environment,
well, yeah,
and hung out with Jerry Falwell for the better part of his early career, but you know,
well, a bigger bunch of sexual freaks and predators you will not find among the people in charge of the evangelical movement in the States. I mean, they're like the Catholic Church, really, aren't they? I mean, yeah. Just look at most of them.
But I have to tell you, I've been turned onto something that is proving great fun to me. John Fox's partner Gail has turned me on to Comment is Free.
Comment is Free.
Yeah,
at
The Guardian.
Oh, right.
And yeah. what a blast that is! Because somebody will winger fundamentalist will post something, and then there will be 954 rational comments underneath it talking about what a booby he is.
Oh yeah, I mean it's that on all the websites you see. I mean, except for the ones where they restrict membership to right wingers and, you know, are very heavy on throwing out the left wing. In anywhere where there's an open forum, you'll get one or two nuts and yeah, another 1,000 or 3 sane people who are just going, well, no. I mean, even if you look at the comments on YouTube, you know, you'll have some nut go on there going, I hate all black people and all gays must die, and you'll just have like the next 40 comments going, and you're really well evolved, aren't you? And, you know, just,
I read this. Gail gave me just as a sort of exemplar,
yeah,
this thread about prayers before the mayoral meetings in I forget which particular township it was,
mm.
And what a joy to read that was. because the rational people were actually in the majority.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. We are, you know, I mean, they're louder than us because they scream all the time because they have to scream to get their point across because there's no logic to it. But we're, you know, the rational group is always in the majority. It's just whether or not we can be asked to pull ourselves up off the couch and get something done to stop these nuts. You know what I mean? I mean, right now in the States, like I've been saying for you, I mean, how long have we been talking, Bob? Years?
Year and a half, two?
Yeah.
Just about as long as the show's been here, Andy.
Yeah, pretty much, man. And, you know, I've been telling you, your country's falling apart. And what's happened?
My country's falling apart. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm, well, okay, I am a bit of a genius, but I'm not exactly Stephen Hawking genius level, yeah? I'm just very, very clever. But it doesn't take someone who's Stephen Hawking to work this out. It takes somebody to sit down and go, America spends more money than it earns and is engendering hatred around the world. What do you think the result is going to be? And they go, hmm.
Well, okay, you just opened the door on something, Andy.
Go on.
And that is... I put forward an assertion last night,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, so I forget who it was that asked me, you know, when is the rest of the world going to come to our rescue?
Oh, screw that. How are we supposed to? You'll nuke us. Your government's absolutely insane. We can't do anything to help you lot. I've been telling you that for ages. You've got to do it. It's your responsibility. To use an American expression, which I probably will screw up, you break it, you take it.
Yeah, the so-called pottery barn rule.
There you go.
Yeah, you break it, you buy it.
But yeah, and you know, we can't help you. We can provide the technology, which we've done. Okay?
And you can provide a pretty darn good example.
Yeah, well, we have. I mean, you know, look at Spain. We took that solar plant that you got in California, and a couple of Spanish engineers just went, "Oh, well, that's a really good idea. I wonder why the Americans haven't worked on that." And everybody else has been saying, oh, well, because the Americans haven't done any more on that, it obviously doesn't work. But these Spanish engineers just went, well, let's try it here. And they've built this brand new, super high-tech solar furnace, which provides enough, like, hot water and power for a small town. And it takes up about the size of a baseball pitch. Now, you need the Spanish sun, admittedly.
Yeah, but we've got places that have that.
Well, you know, when you look at the data, the amount of solar energy falling just on Arizona is more than is all the oil that's been pumped in one day.
Yes, it is. And the wind that blows across the high plains.
Yeah, yeah, not even counting the wind and the waves and all these other things. I mean, over here, there's this plan to cover the Severn Estuary, which is one of two truly tidal estuaries that have, you know, unique habitats in the world. It has a bore. Do you know what a bore is?
No, I don't think.
Okay, when you have a certain combination of shelving and estuaries, and when the tide comes in, you end up with, like, this wave that goes upriver.
Sure, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's called a bore over here. I'm not sure what it's called over there. But surfers sit on it and just surf about 5 miles an hour all the way up the River Severn up to at least as far as Chepstow. So it's like, you know, 20 miles, 30 miles up the river or something is possible. But they're going to build a great big barrier across the mouth of the estuary and turn it into a great big tidal generator, which... is incredibly expensive, will completely destroy the environment, and won't produce anywhere near the energy level they say that it will, okay? But instead of that, they could put in just little turbine generators that you just throw into the river, and they're kind of cigar-shaped, and they've got a couple of fans and a dynamo and a wire coming out of it, and each of those will provide more than enough for a house from the River Severn, and you could put them in all the way along it. And they cost, you know, £1,000 or £2 each when you get the production up. But no, big industry wants its cement contracts, it wants its oil burnt, it wants, you know, big building projects that are dangerous and will cost extra money for danger money, which you won't pay out if you kill anyone. The system we have, because of your country, is corrupt. And it is because of your country. Now, I'm not saying it's American citizens that have done it, but it's American citizens that have allowed it to
have let it be done.
Yeah.
And passive negligence is as damning as active.
Well, in some ways it's more damning because active.
Well, yeah, because passive negligence implies, Andy, that you could have done something, but you chose to sit on your arse instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, but you know, but there was. I go back and forth on this, Andy. Sometimes I get very, very angry with my countrymen. And sometimes I look and I say, you know, under the circumstances, what the hell do I want them to do?
They
work two and three jobs a day because George Bush has declared that that's uniquely American.
Well, it is.
Sadly, but I would have said tragically American. Yeah, they work two and three jobs a day. They get their kids. Their kids, to the extent that they see them and still know them, are wondering where their mommies and daddies are. But they get fed. Their public school systems are in the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And all in the world they want to do in the 2 hours between job one and job two, or job two and job three, is sit the hell down, have a little bite of dinner, and not sit and not freak out.
Yeah, I know. And this is why, I mean, I'm leaning towards that it's definitely going to fall apart. Because I just don't see any way it can be fixed by people without, in some way, just everyone going, right, stuff it, that's it, I've had enough. Because it doesn't have to be a violent revolution, but of course we must remember the maxim. Those who make bloodless revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable.
Inevitable, sure.
And, you know, this is absolutely true. And the problem is, Cheney loves blood. You know, Cheney, I mean...
Look, we've got those, what are they called, passive denial weapons that the Air Force has been working on?
Like the gay bomb, don't worry about it.
No, sadly it's not. This is very, very real. It's a microwave weapon that makes your skin burn. And the guy who was in charge of the program with the little Air Force costume and all the little and all the jewelry and stars forth.
I've heard about that one. There are ways around that.
But wait, Andy. The real kicker on that is, before we sell it to the Israelis to deploy against the Palestinians, we need to test it on some American protesters first.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, these guys are complete fascists. The Air Force has been evangelized to a degree that I find very scary, and the only thing that really doesn't worry me too much about it is if they, ever came to drop bombs on Europe. Well, there's lots of Sam 7s just over the border in Russia. It wouldn't take as long to get hold of them. But your Air Force is a very scary institution, and so is the Space Command organization that are very shadowy and hidden away. I mean, Space Command is the one that's actually in charge of your military, not the president. You know that, don't you?
To a certain extent, yeah. I ascribe to that Bill Hicks business where he says that when a new president comes into office, they take him into a little room
and
show him the movie, and he goes, wow, this is the assassination of JFK, but it's from an angle I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And they go, precisely our point, and he says, where do I sign?
Yeah, yeah. And, this is the thing about what Barack and Hillary have been saying. They've made little mentions. Barack has said we need a change in the future and stop all the corruption. Hillary made those mentions here and there about green energy, not weapons. Yeah, all right. Well, it can be done. It won't be done by them from their own hook. I mean, Hillary's not going to get into office and go, let's stop building quite so many missiles. We don't need quite so many missiles. Let's build more green power. She's not going to do that. What might happen is if, as soon as the election finishes, every single senator and congressperson and the president, whoever that might be, receives a letter saying, okay, you're in charge. The Democrats are now in power. We want this. And list the demands. Green power, an end to oil, an end to nuclear pollution, the nuclear polluting of the planet, an end to of invasions on behalf of oil corporations, an end to corruption, and all these things. And then at the bottom of it say, and if we don't see movement on this within 1 week, which is a fair time, they can get going on that, start the investigation, then we will start a campaign to remove all of you and replace you with proper liberals. That's what you need to do. This is called organization. Now, I'm putting myself at some risk here because I'm telling you how to organize, and I'm not just you, all the people that are listening, and I'm putting all of the people who are listening at some risk, because it's when you start organizing people against the military industrial complex, congressional complex, you commit suicide with a gun and manage to shoot yourself from 10 feet away, or Martin Luther King gets knocked off by some mafia dudes, or, whatever it is, because they are so paranoid about losing control, Bob. So paranoid. They're so scared. And never forget that. Everybody out there, never forget. They are far more scared of us than we are of them. Far more scared. Because they live in this little world that is completely fragile and completely vulnerable to us. Because all we have to do is just stop. Look at those truckers. If all those truckers just stopped, and even better, did what the French and the British truckers do, drive up to the petrol fueling plant and just park their trucks across the road. get themselves arrested, get the truck moved, another trucker comes along and does the same thing. And you'll shut the entire country down. That'll be it. It'll be over.
Sounds like a beautiful thing, Andy.
Well, there's better ways of doing it. I mean, a better way would be for everyone to just walk out into the streets and head down to the local city hall and say, that's it, we've had enough.
Yeah. And we've got, those terrified people you were talking about, they've got stuff in place already for that.
While
there are some brave souls who would say, screw it, I'm doing it anyway, there's a lot of people that say, you know, I think I'm going to the race this weekend.
Well, no, I mean, when it gets to the point it'll happen or you'll just starve and die. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. It will get to the point where something has to be done. You know, there are people all over the United States now who are just killing themselves and their families and stuff in bizarre situations. You know, guy comes home, he's had enough, his wife's nagging at him too much about the bills, bang, 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 and then bang. You know what I mean? There was that guy the other week, I think he was in Arizona, killed his wife and three kids, and then turned himself over on the freeway in his car and burnt himself to death.
This is a little bit heavy. It looks like our next-door neighbor here was a victim of murder last night.
Victim of murder last night?
Yeah, yeah.
Damn. I mean, yeah.
And the rumors are already running rampant about, you know, the woman and the man and the, you know, shot in the chest and was it a suicide? And, yeah. But this is, you know, this is America. We, you know, it's gonna come and knock on your door sooner or later.
Well, yeah, I mean, your whole country is so fragile and so fractured. You know, it really does worry me because, I mean, you know, I know I'm not going to starve here in Europe because, well, we have socialist governments and we have plenty of food in Europe. We produce more than enough. But I'm really worried about what will happen to the States because you guys don't have train networks to move food around.
No, we don't. That's why
I keep... How far are you from a station?
A station? 25 miles.
25 miles.
But the thing is, I'm unusual in that regard. I've got a station close to me. There's an entire strip of the United States that's not within 300 miles of one. I mean,
well, there are places in Britain where you're not within 25 miles of a station, but that's only when you've got a village of 100 people and nothing around you. I mean, you know, in every town and every city, there's a station and a rail line for it.
Well, imagine. Just wrap your mind around this, Andy. Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah. Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
No passenger rail.
No, I believe it. I mean, your country is sick in a very systemic way. And like I say, it's got to be ground roots. You've got to get out there and find people. Like when you go to these, I hear these people talking about their protests outside places and they go to the, you know, hold a candle and all that sort of, just stand there for a bit protesting and all that sort of stuff. You need to do a bit of networking with these people as well. Find out who it is that's retired or is close to retiring and could run. Because let's be honest, all the people that want to run, I've seen recently, that are really politically active, are too young to be accepted by your system. You know, they're older than the necessary age limits. But
you are now preaching from a section of the prayer book that I've been working for a while, Andy.
Yeah.
And that is, if you run, if you don't win, it's okay. But get the people that matter to you used to the idea that it's okay to get out and try.
Yeah, well, here's an idea. You know, say you're in a city and you've got a Democrat or a Republican, you know, a Democrat that's not doing their job or a Republican. Well, get together and put up three or four different Democratic candidates, each one on a niche issue. If you think you can't possibly beat that Democrat, but each of those ones on the niche issue will be forcing that Democrat to address their niche issue in debates and in flyers and TV ads and stuff like that. And you'll force them to work for their money, if nothing else.
Well, I remember that we had a story. I think it was coming out of Wisconsin, Andy, of a pair of guys from a university.
Yeah.
And they had differing political aims and differing political schools of thought.
Mm-hmm.
But they determined that they would each run for their party's nomination for the same office against the incumbent. And they agreed going in that they would run jointly.
Yeah.
And that if one guy won, the other guy would work on his staff, and if the other guy won, the first guy would work on his.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. More than that, do multiple people, do six or seven or eight or nine candidates, people that appeal to every different group, and have each of those people say, well, look, if you want to vote for me, but, you know, at the end of it, I don't get the vote, I want you to vote for one of these people, because these are the same as me. Do you know what I mean? That's what you've got to do. You've got to start putting these groups together and actually pushing towards getting stuff done. Getting the school boards, man. School boards are a really important place.
Yes, they are.
It's going to be 3 or 4 years.
And frankly, that's where the change begins.
You get in the school boards now, in the next election, how many more voters are there going to be?
Yeah, sure. I agree with every bit of that. The clean election stuff that I talk about that we push every year in the legislature here in West Virginia, one of these days it'll get passed.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, you've been getting closer and closer.
Yeah, we have. And it's not even compulsory.
No.
One person runs as clean elections and the other person runs as dirty money. And you know what? Beat them to death with it. Hi, I'm your clean elections candidate. That's the dirty money candidate.
Exactly. Nobody said politics had to be nice.
Yeah, it's not like it's going to be surrounded by angels because we get clean elections. But what you might get is a little bit better quality of debate.
No, but I mean, going back to the guy I heard the other night, I can't remember who it was said it to you, but said, when are people going to come and help us? We can't come and help you because a lot of Americans just are so arrogant and so stuck into the American, we're the best, USA, moron, fucking...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, excuse my language.
It's all right.
Just that idiocy. There's so many Americans locked into that. Even, you know, progressive liberal Americans. If I was to suggest they should do something maybe like, oh, I don't know, clean up American politics, they'd go, oh, what do you know about democracy? You're... Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can't talk...
You're not even free. You're a subject of a queen.
Exactly. And
Andy, I know. I heard an interview with Tracy Ullman today that had aired, I guess, a week or so ago on one of the National Public Radio interview programs called Fresh Air.
Right.
Terry Gross. Good interviewer. And she was talking about having recently become a naturalized American citizen. And she said they brought us into this room, and, you know, she's got that lovely, lovely English accent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when she's not being someone else.
Yeah.
And they brought us into this room, and we swore the oath, and there were about, you know, 1,000 of us or something. And she said, then they gave us these Chinese-made American flags to wave. And played us a movie that had that awful Glee Greenwood song about I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And she said, I had a real existential crisis moment then. What have I done?
Yeah. Well.
And outside the room, there was a Democratic operative and a Republican operative waiting to sign people up. Come on over.
Yeah. Well, there's no way in hell you guys would get me to become an American citizen, even if America would take me, which, well, you wouldn't.
Well, she said she decided, you know, she's been here for decades, but she decided to go for it and become a naturalized citizen after the 2004 election. She said, you know, I want to have a say in this.
Yeah, I'd get the hell out, but then I'd never go to live in the States anyway, because I'm sorry, your country scares me. Scared the crap out of me.
Someday I got to... this is what's so frustrating. I got to get back out and see more of the world. I just got to.
Yeah, man. Well, you're always welcome in the UK.
Well, and I appreciate that.
The mother country.
Well, exactly. You know, and I can go up and eat haggis in the north and, you know... Yeah.
I'll take you to some proper golf courses and you can show me how...
Right. You know, the ones that happened because that's what happens when you turn sheep loose on flat, windy land.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean?
Spend billions in some desert.
Right. You know, frankly, golf courses in deserts are as offensive to me as ski slopes in Dubai.
Yeah, I mean, the ski slope in Dubai I wouldn't have a problem with if they ran it on solar power, but they run it on oil. It's insane.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, they've got so much solar power that they could easily make a very big fridge, which is all it is. It's a very big fridge. You know, they could easily do that with solar energy. No problem. But they're burning oil. They're absolutely nuts.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
I know. Hey, Andy, I got to roll on. We're out of time.
Cool, man. Well, yeah, I shall do the link up through the chat room in future, man.
All right, cool. Wonderful. And give our best to Hazel, please.
I will.
Tell her I'm sorry she got woke up the other night.
That's all right, man. No worries. It was my fault. I shouldn't have been shouting.
Take care, Andy.
You too, man. Have fun.
Bye now.
Bye, mate.
And the weekend is, as they say, upon me. And there are a number of blinking lights for which I apologize. We'll pick it up again Monday if that's okay with you. I don't think, let's see, this is John's night off, and I don't think Rick Goodner is going to go live tonight. So I'm not going to do a horn solo. And Peter Godbold is coming up with a classic Peter Godbold from the 12th of February. So I wish you all a very wonderful weekend. And I encourage you to join us in the chat room on Saturday evening, if it's evening your time, daylight, whatever. Middle of the night, that's fine too. 9 p.m. Eastern Time for Night Sounds with Billy Shears. It'll rotate through the weekend with Rick Goodner's Rick's Place. And in the meantime, just have a wonderful weekend. And try to let some of this stuff just, you know, water off a duck's back. Take a breath. Chill out. And think about doing something that constitutes positive change. Many thanks to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, our chief engineer, John Fox, the manager of all of our streaming operations, and the very salvation itself of liberal talk radio since 2002, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org, he's got a fundraiser going on. He needs some help, just like the horn does. Profound thanks to the sponsor of all horn programming, our good friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Have you not been there yet? Why not? Go there. Join up. Be part of the problem. Don't care where you are in this world. You're downstream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 115 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also